It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 23rd day of May, 2023. This program is live. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you go on the interweb tubes if you would like to find our little hideaway. And it's where you go if you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky's any real-time madcap multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. All time zones in between in the great globe round. And where, if you should happen to pop by just now, you'll be greeted by the early arrivers. There they are, Theo and Squeaky and Anatole. And, well, I'm the only moderator right now. So y'all behave yourself. Not enough cops! Roger had some sort of an appointment this afternoon. I know that. Don't know where Sparky is. And don't know where Steve is. But, hi, y'all. Hi. I'm Robin. Let's see. What's that, Theo? Don't sit on the kitty. Theo, do not sit on the kitty. I get that. I have a little tortie that follows me everywhere I go. She's half, I think she's half cat and half duck and half lamb. So it is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. And before we get into all the festivities, by the way, sorry I'm a couple of minutes late. That was just a thing. A bit of a shout out to our pal Joy in Ann Arbor, who is not in Ann Arbor. She's down in the greater Fort Worth area visiting Mama. And I think she did this just so that I would see it. There's a new Bluebell ice cream flavor out called Dr. Pepper Float. Oh, get out of town. Can't get Bluebell here. She can't get it up in Michigan either. But apparently she went right to the grocery store and picked some up. I can only imagine how good that's going to be. Glad you got there safely, Joy. And, of course, every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude. And this day is no different. So, consequently, we say thank you to our 23rd day of the month PayPal subscribers. That means thank you to our friends at Mellow Moonlit Meadow, our only subscriber for the 23rd day of the month. And over on the Mellow Moonlit Meadow, I'm sure they'd love to have some company. If you'd like to be a subscriber, it's real easy. Just run over to headon.live right there on the main page, put in $10 and say, make this a recurring monthly donation. You'll never have to think about it again. Yeah? Yeah. So where we stand fundraising wise is $1,412. And hopefully we will bring that down some because, well, we got the Appalachian Power extortion racket off of our back, but there are other bills to deal with. So any help is great help if you'd like to come along on that. What it amounts to is today and yesterday and Friday and Thursday are all unfunded. And $88 of last Wednesday is funded. So maybe if we could knock out Wednesday before we get to this Wednesday, be less than a week behind, would be great. Thank you. Thank you so much. All right. Do you like the... Dr. Pepper Float Bluebell will be... available in these states. Ralph's just sent this along, being the official Horn ad hoc Bluebell ice cream research department. It's a vanilla ice cream mixed with a Dr. Pepper flavored sherbet. Dang. So, it'll be available in Indiana, Kentucky, part of Virginia, all of the Confederacy, bits of Missouri, Kansas, Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona, a little teeny bit of Nevada, and Oklahoma. Oh, so close, and yet so far. Although that does look like I could probably get on I-64 and maybe find it at a grocery store in Lexington, Kentucky. There might be a little bit of bluebell in Ohio, the Buckeye State. If it gets really bad, Joy, you know, looking at this map, you can always zoom down to Talibandiana and grab some. That just looks delightful. It just thrills my soul. Thanks for that, Ralphs. As to not enough cops, Stephen New York says, clearly, the chat room is not based in the United States. Oh, God. True. Early cowbell for Steve. Yes. Titanic Tuesday. Yes. Yes. Randy, you did get an answer. Randy Radar said, still no answer on my Wisconsin question. Aren't there any Wisconsin Horn listeners? Yeah, lots of Wisconsin Horn listeners. And in fact, up until last year, Ralphs lived in Wisconsin. She's now in New Jersey. And she did send me a note saying that she dug around to the best of her ability. And it looks like she still has that judgeship, namely Janet Protasiewicz. She won her seat. And this story goes back to 7 days ago. And she won by 55%, 55.5% to 44.5%. And she is, she's there. So, I think you helped out, Randy Radar. Oh, and in an effort to make sure we don't goose egg it tonight, we can get down below $1,400 if someone wants to meet a $25 challenge in honor, so to speak, of Ralph's almost losing her iPhone in a lift. Luckily, I emailed my sister and she called my phone. The lift driver brought it back. Well, hooray for common decency. That's actually a pleasant little story, Ralph's, and I'm glad for you. And I'm glad your sister thought to do that. So, anybody want to match $25, we will get down to Let's see. 1362. Because Ralph's will double your money. Thank you, Ralph's. Thank you so much. Now, as for this Titanic Tuesday, when we take note of manifestations of Titanic intellect on the part of the maggots and the right wing and such like, such as the Iraq. Stop it. That was a long time ago. That young lady is full grown, is a full grown one now. Probably got oodles of kids or something. I don't know. Titanic intellect? You want Titanic intellect? Here's some Titanic intellect. Full speed ahead into that there iceberg. It's apparently confirmed that Ron Monkey Up DeSantis, the man who became the governor of Florida the first time through, with only with the help of real live, no kidding Nazis, who helped him out by making racist, filthy robocalls all over the Sunshine State. Well, tomorrow, he's going to make it official and become and announce his candidacy for fascist president of the United States of America. Funny that it's audio only. Maybe he's as camera shy as me, or maybe he's afraid that he'll have one of those incredibly fake outbursts of phony laughter or something. But he's partnering with, because this is peak monkey up, he's partnering with Leon Scum over at Twitter for a live audio-only Twitter Spaces event tomorrow evening at 6. So we will have been into the program for an hour, and we will not break away from this, from whatever it is we're talking about tomorrow, to listen to a blessed word that Ron Monkey Up DeSantis has to say. The less fascism, the better. And then later that night, he'll go on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda to talk about his campaign. And at some point this week, he will file with the Federal Election Commission, which is kind of, in presidential campaign terms, that's kind of like, you know, getting all legal and getting married up to the campaign. And Leon Scum has already said that, he's a big monkey up backer. And I'm not at all surprised. Anybody is? Anybody? Bueller? No? So he will earn the ire of Nitwit Nero, whom, of course, we all despise. But then again, none of us are immune to the fundamental schadenfreude urge of, come on, let's you and him fight. I would not allow Ron Monkey Up DeSantis to get anywhere near a small child or a child of any sort, especially knowing, as Nitwit Nero sort of pointed out, sort of accurately, Monkey Up appears in at least one photograph from when he was a high school teacher, a high school history teacher, in which he's partying with some underage girls who are underage to drink alcohol and are nonetheless knocking out bottles of Budweiser. Groomer. So at present, among the six god-awful Republican candidates, Trump is still polling at around 51% of Republicans and GOP-leaning independents. Oh, please. Yeah, they're independent. Monkey Up is at 25%. And the other thing is, a majority of those voters are indicating, well, I'd be happy with either one of them. They're both hateful as hell. I added that last part. Monkey Up had a call with the money last week, and he said,
you have basically three people at this point that are credible in this whole thing, Biden, Trump, and me. And I think of those three, two have a chance to get elected president, Biden and me, based on all the data in the swing states, which is not great for the former president and probably insurmountable because people aren't going to change their view of him.
Meanwhile, an advisor to Nitwit Nero, speaking to ABC News, said,
announcing on Twitter is perfect for Ron DeSantis. This way he doesn't have to interact with people and the media can't ask him any questions.
Well, I mean, he's not wrong. I'm not excited. And I'm lying. I am excited. I'm excited to watch those two absolutely beat the tar out of each other. And I hope they do. I hope there's nothing, well, I don't know why maggots would accept a simulacrum of a maggot as opposed to the real thing. And interestingly, people are already out there as the saying goes, sharpening the knives and it's aimed mostly at Monkey Up's spouse, Casey, with some people saying that she's probably half the time it feels like she wants to be running the show. Isn't that interesting? Meanwhile, another critic has weighed in on Monkey Up's book. Jennifer Salai took one for the team and read it. She said that Monkey Up's book, what's the title of it? Manly Men and Their Masculine Manliness. No. The Courage to be Free. Oh, she didn't so much review it as pen a crushing brief against it. Among other things, she said, while his first book was weird and esoteric enough to have obviously been written by a human, this one reads like a politician's memoir turned out by ChatGPT. She went on to say that The Courage to be Free appears to be courageously free of anything that resembles charisma or a discernible sense of humor. His new book will leave some supporters who have encouraged DeSantis to humanize himself for a national audience sorely disappointed. In his acknowledgments, he thanks a hard-working team of literary professionals who were critical to telling the Florida story. But presumably those professionals could only do so much with the material they were given. Silk purse. Sow's ear. Yeah. And yes, he had written another book called Dreams from Our Founding Fathers, First Principles in the Age of Obama, back in 2011. It was a deliberate act of disrespect to Barack Obama's memoir of his early years, Dreams from My Father, a story of race and inheritance. And I'm not inclined to, like I said, pay attention to anything Monkey Up says tomorrow evening, but Based on the announcement by Tim has the check cleared, Scott. Timmy! He'll need to he'll need to stake out some turf in the "there ain't no such thing as racism in America" camp. Because Republicans love to be told there's no such thing as racism and that there is no systemic oppression in this country. Funny, though, back in the book in 2011, The Courage to Be Free of Talent, he said, "I viewed having earned degrees from Yale and Harvard Law School to be political scarlet letters as far as a GOP primary went. The voters valued education and probably assumed that I was a smart guy." Well, you'd be assuming a lot. "But those elite universities have become so synonymous with leftist ideology and a ruling class mentality that most grassroots conservatives were understandably skeptical of those institutions." And then he also writes about getting married to the woman who would go on to give him some white go-go boots. He said he had to make he made it specific that there would be no Disney characters in any of their wedding photos.
"I wanted our special day to look and feel like a traditional wedding. I didn't want Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck in our wedding photos."
And, of course, he runs away from Nitwit Nero, who is probably why he won the Florida primary back in 2018. God, he's gross. Just so entirely extra, super, double plus, yucky. Man, let me see if I can find that other... back to Bluebell Dr. Pepper. Steve in New York said, "How funny is this? I just started typing in 'where can I find Bluebell.' As soon as I finished typing 'bell,' the words 'where can I find Bluebell Dr. Pepper ice cream' was Google's second suggestion." Well, even the AI loves Bluebell. And adds, by the way, DeSuctus' book subtitle. Steve says, I really wish I were manlier than Josh the Sprinter Hawley. Josh Hauling ass. So much masculinity out there. And as to the orange stain and DeSuctus, do you think DeSuctus, Steve asks, will fizzle like Jebbia or Scott Walker? He might have a little bit more staying power. But in the end, I do think, because, again, the comparison for this is not American politics. The comparison for this is not what we traditionally refer to a political campaign is, a race. No, any political campaign that involves Nitwit Nero, by definition, is going to be professional wrestling. And at some point in time, Nitwit Nero will pull out a folding chair, bash Monkey up across the noggin with it, pick him up, spin him around, and throw him out of the ring. At least I hope. Randy Radar pointing out, Yale University is so right-wing that it could disappear into a vortex and the country would probably be better off. I've begun to think that about a lot of the Ivy League. We need less Ivy League presidents and maybe more from, I don't know, the Big Ten. Certainly not the SEC. Nor the ACC. Well, I mean, okay. Austin College is in the ACC. Syracuse is in the ACC. Pitt is in the ACC. Meanwhile, 75 miles south of the University of Pittsburgh, West Virginia University, is in the Big 12. You know, headquartered in Dallas. Because, you know, us hillbillies just love road tripping to Dallas every now and then. And speaking of Florida, seems like we speak of Florida rather a lot. There is a new travel advisory. Out regarding travel to Florida. It was issued by the largest LGBTQ rights group in the United States. The Human Rights Campaign, alongside the NAACP, the League of United Latin American Citizens, the Florida Immigrant Coalition, and Equality Florida, all joined together to issue a travel or relocation warning for Monkey Up's fascist nightmare. The Human Rights Campaign didn't quite make it all the way to saying they wanted a boycott or making a blanket suggestion that no one visit Florida, but they wanted to make sure that people knew about the new laws that that Monkey Up's pet legislature has passed that are downright hateful to the LGBTQ plus community, take away abortion access from people who can become pregnant, and let Florida man and Florida woman carry firearms anywhere they want to, concealed, without a permit. Kelly Robinson is president of the Human Rights Campaign. Kelly said those who visit must join us in their vocal opposition to these dangerous policies. Those who pick another place to work, to go to school, or to spend their vacation should make clear why they're not heading to Florida. And the NAACP had already spoken up this past weekend. They said that the laws passed by Monkey Up's pet legislature and signed into being by Monkey Up are openly hostile toward African Americans, people of color, and LGBTQ plus individuals. You couldn't get me to go to Florida. Under almost any circumstance. I have so much fear and sadness for anyone who has to live there and is at the same time LGBTQ plus, black, Latino, anything that isn't cisgender, heterosexual, and white. Sorry, I'm still looking for that one story. Because there's some interesting material in Monkey Up's first book. Oh, damn it. Because, among other things, he selectively quotes James Madison to claim that there's no systemic racism in the country, when if you see the entire quote from Federalist 8 in full, Madison's talking about the fact that there are people who want to vote who don't own property, and goes on to talk about how qualifying property included other human beings. then he just mentions that as a matter of course. In yesterday's program, we talked a little bit about the onslaught of maggots and bigots that Target stores are having to deal with. The CEO of Target is Brian Cornell, and he is a big proponent of DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And with all the current butthurtery, Michael Lev Rahm of Fortune Magazine in the Leadership Next podcast said, what's your take on some of the pushback now on so-called woke capitalism? We're seeing a lot of backlash, not just on the social justice side, but woke capitalism in general. What is your take on it? Well, first of all, I think if you're a responsible journalist, you don't use the word woke. Because at this point in time, it's just a bullhorn, not even a dog whistle. It's just a bullhorn for announcing that you don't understand. I mean, why not ask him, what's your take on diversity, equity, and inclusion? And it's worth noting there are more than 450,000 people who work for Target in some 2,000 U.S. store directors. 40% of the store directors are from diverse backgrounds. Half of the store directors are women. In Target stores where most of the shoppers speak Spanish, they made an effort to properly translate the signage in the store, and they want people to feel at home there. Now, Cornell said, when we think about about purpose at Target, it's really about helping all the families, and that all word is really important. Most of America shops at Target, so we want to do the right thing to support families across the country. And we think those are just good business decisions, and it's the right thing for society, and it's the great thing for our brand. He was pretty vocal in his opinion. He said, the things we've done from a DE&I standpoint, it's adding value. It's helping us drive sales. It's building greater engagement with both our teams and our guests, and those are just the right things for our business today. But I think the important part there is the observation that it's time for woke to get canceled. Not DEI, but the use of the term. I mean, I think back to the great purity wars of 2016, and in which, you know, anybody who didn't have a, and this is nothing against him, but anybody who didn't swear ride or die fealty to Bernie was a goddamn neoliberal shell. And we got to the point where neoliberal had no actual meaning. It was just anything that a Bernie bro didn't like. Neoliberals! And we've gotten there with woke. And it'll be fine with me if we actually talk about the issues instead of letting them talk about buzzwords. All these stories come with a little poll question at the end. Do you think Target is too woke? 70%. Yes, I think so. Of course, there's no follow-up question. Do you even know what woke means? No! Because of course they don't. That was never really the point. Hey, there's Sparky in the chat room. Thanks, Sparky. Glad you're there. As to retail, Matt in San Francisco says, there's a lot of gays in retail. We got a flair for making things pretty. That merchandising doesn't just set itself. Just saying. I understand. And, you know, I think maybe there's a gay deficit at Wally World. Place is grim. Although I was bummed out to find out that the caramel popcorn went the way of all flesh the last time I was in a Target. I discovered that in 2019 you could get a hot bag of caramel popcorn and the whole store just smelled heavenly. But now I think the pandemic took that down. Damn it. And going back to Michael Dukakis and the picture of him in the tank, or God help him, John Kerry in the sperm suit. Bless his heart, wherever his heart or spirit or soul is. I thought Bart Kopp was going to have a baby in 2004 when they put out that picture of John Kerry in the sperm suit. It was some sort of clean suit. He was visiting a pharmaceutical lab or something like that. But it was not a great look for a presidential candidate, nor was Michael Dukakis riding around in a tank. But Stephen New York says, if you thought the video of the tank ride was everywhere, just wait. And it's a side-by-side of Nancy Sinatra. Boots! With the white go-go boots and monkey up DeClantis standing there with his jeans tucked into his white go-go boots that his wife Casey purchased for him. Some of Monkey Up's handlers are saying, listen, okay, if you're going to run a presidential campaign, you can't let her run it for you. Because they have a very strong marriage, and it's a complete partnership. So I don't know who hates the LGBTQ plus community, Hispanics and African Americans more. Is it Monkey Up? Or is it Casey Monkey? And Scott in San Diego says, hint, better woke than whack. Just saying. Oh, Scott, that's so whack. And there was an incident at the White House Monday. Sai Varshith Kandula, aged 19, of Chesterfield, Missouri, took a U-Haul box truck and tried to run through the security barrier at the White House. When the cops got hold of him and started questioning him, he said he wanted to seize the power of the government of the United States, kill Joe Biden. Yeah. This all happened a couple of hours after we were off the air yesterday, about 10 o'clock on the north side of Lafayette Square near the White House. Sai Varshith Kandula has been charged with 5 counts, assault with a dangerous weapon, reckless operation of a motor vehicle, trespassing, destruction of federal property, U.S. Park, according to the U.S. Park Police, and charged with threatening to kill, kidnap, or inflict harm on a president, vice president, or their families. He went from St. Louis to Dulles International Airport. He rented the U-Haul at Dulles and drove to the White House. Then, after he tried to ram through and failed, then he got out of the truck and started waving a Nazi flag. At that point in time, park police nabbed him. Yeah, no Secret Service or White House personnel were injured. And Anthony Guglielmi, the spokesman for the Secret Service, said a preliminary investigation reveals the driver may have intentionally struck the barrier. There were no explosives in the truck. That happened yesterday, and then prior to that, you know, you haul trucks, you wonder about explosives, because 1995, Timothy McVeigh, and then there's this creepy little bit of information. Yeah. You know that the materials that Timothy McVeigh and his cronies used to blow up the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City that day in 1995. Well, they were the same explosives that are used here on a daily basis in the sacrifice zone. Ammonium nitrate and fuel oil explosives. ANFO, for short. Last month, a trainload of ammonium nitrate left the explosives company Dyno Nobel in Cheyenne, Wyoming. The train was bound for California. Two weeks later, the train arrived at a rail stop in the Mojave Desert. It was the damnedest thing. It was empty. Tons of ammonium nitrate were gone. Investigators and officials are mostly clueless. And when you have 30 tons, what was in the U-Haul at the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building, by the way, was 2.5 tons. So somewhere out there, there's tons of missing ammonium nitrate. Now, in an effort to calm people who might be nervous about something like that, they're saying it probably leaked out the bottom of the car. Somebody didn't twist the Knutton valve tight enough, and it just sort of dribbled out over the course of those 2 weeks between Cheyenne, Wyoming and the Mojave Desert. Because ammonium nitrate is also a fertilizer. So we'll just check along the train route and see if there's anything growing in between the rails and the ties more vigorously than they might otherwise have been. According to Dyno Nobel, they said, we think this here ammonium nitrate fell out of the covered hopper car it was transported on. They're kind of like coal cars. It was sealed when it left the Cheyenne facility, and the seals were still intact when it arrived in Saltdale. The initial assessment is a leak through the bottom gate on the rail car may have developed in transit. Federal Railroad Administration, however, speaking to KQED, said what they've been able to figure out is one of the hopper car gates wasn't properly closed. Union Pacific, meanwhile, said, it's too early to say anything for sure. The fertilizer is designed for ground application and quick soil absorption. If the loss resulted from a rail car leak over the course of transportation from origin to destination, the release should pose no risk to public health or the environment. At this point in the investigation, we do not believe there's any criminal or malicious activity involved. Believe. You know, if the writers weren't on strike, I'll bet you one of those could come up with a scenario where it didn't just leak out. I do find it interesting, though, that Union Pacific refers to it as fertilizer when it actually came from an explosives firm. And then again, calling it explosives would probably make people more nervous than they already are. Dino Nobel, lining up and getting ready for the inevitable lawsuit, said, we had limited control over the rail car while it was in transit. They're bringing it back to Wyoming for us to have a look-see at it. We'll try to make sure this don't happen anymore in the future. California Public Utilities Commission says that they're also investigating. But I'm just wondering what highway project or whatever this was going to be used to blow someplace to kingdom come, because we also had the story yesterday at the very end of the program about the highway widening taking place on the eastern front of the Sierra Nevada. I'm guessing there might be some blasting taking place there. But that's just rank speculation. The truck at the White House, Steve in New York, says, am I channeling my inner Alex Jones, or does this seem a bit fishy? The Nazi flag just seemed a bit much. I don't have any idea what it could be, but it just strikes me as too obvious. Well, I'm sure that the perp figured if he had a big vehicle, he'd have a better chance. I don't know. For me, Steve, it is just dumb enough to be plausible. But it's weird that you've got the convergence of three separate stories, otherwise unrelated, that form up to create a more than plausible scenario. Thank God he wasn't able to get his hands on 5,000 pounds of ammonium nitrate and fuel oil explosives. As to the U-Haul, Matt in San Francisco says, I'm sure the Nazi flag had nothing to do with it. He's not a white supremacist. He's just a quiet fellow that keeps to himself, always wave to the neighbors. Right, I mean, his name sounds as though he is probably of South Asian descent. And, of course, the Nazis actually appropriated that symbol from South Asian symbology. Not saying, just saying. Pretty safe bet, says Scott in San Diego, that rail car wasn't carrying peace prizes. Yeah. Oh, dear, there's something to worry about. Ralph says maybe ammonium nitrate Bundy's involved in the missing ammonium nitrate. I wish that was just unthinkably wrong. As to the U-Haul, John in Central PA says, he had a GOP flag. Oh, is that what it was? Well, there's also been reference to a Nazi flag. Well, oh, I see. Yes. Yeah, a GOP flag. He had a Nazi flag. He had a Nazi flag. He had a GOP flag. Same. Took me a minute, John, but, you know, it's Tuesday. So, you know, 30 tons of ammonium nitrate here, 30 tons there. And I'm gonna bring this story up. This one was just mean-spirited and sad. I've seen it reported from a number of outlets. This past Saturday was graduation for a lot of high schools, including Harrison Central High School in southern Mississippi, Gulfport. And a 17-year-old girl, trans girl, sorry. A 17-year-old trans girl had been presenting as a girl for 4 years at her high school. She had worn girls' clothing, girls' shoes, done her hair in feminine fashion, treated as a girl by her classmates. And then, as graduation approached, the principal of the high school, Kelly Fuller, and the superintendent of the school district, Mitchell King, told the young woman that in order to walk at graduation, she would have to dress like a boy. She would have to cross-dress. She would have to wear boy drag. She would have to wear a white shirt and black slacks and black shoes and black socks. Girls were expected to wear white dresses. And before any of this ever happened, the girl had gone shopping with her mama and bought her dress and shoes. She was as excited as any high school senior. To walk at graduation. It's about as big a moment as a teenager can have. That and driver's license. Graduation's a big deal. And those shitty human beings, Kelly Fuller and Mitchell King, who knew exactly what she'd been doing for 4 years and never said a word, deprived her of her graduation. The ACLU of Mississippi stepped into the breach. Good on them. And sued. But time was short, and the U.S. District Judge who heard the case was a guy by the name of Taylor B. McNeil, a United States District Judge for the Southern District of Mississippi. And he told this girl that if she wanted to walk at graduation, she by God had to cross dress like a boy. The lawsuit paper said over the past 4 years of her high school career, plaintiff LB has worn dresses, skirts, and other traditionally feminine clothing items without issue or repercussion, including during in-person classes, school-sponsored events and programs, and extracurricular activities. Defendant's sudden decision to prohibit LB from wearing a dress and heeled shoes now during the final and perhaps most important event of her high school career serves no legitimate interest or justification. But Superintendent Mitchell King called LB's mama and said she needs to wear pants, socks, and shoes like a boy. Like a boy. And so U.S. District Judge Taylor McNeil agreed with that transphobic, misogynistic, piece of shit school superintendent and the transphobic, misogynistic, piece of shit school principal. In a moment, you won't be surprised why. Taylor McNeil, U.S. District Judge Taylor McNeil, he sat the bench on December the 14th, 2020. That's right. He's a maggot. And he's a late arriving maggot. There were only 11. There were only 31 days left in the Nitwit Nero administration when he took his seat on the bench. And by the way, Taylor McNeil, is or will be this year 40 years old. There is no way he is competent to sit on that bench. His nomination was confirmed 53-39 on December 1st, 2020. So this one's on Nitwit Nero. And it's on Moscow Mitch McConnell. And I hope this young woman grows up and has a successful, fantastic life. And never, ever, ever stops despising Republicans. But there's a journalism note out of all of this too. Like I said, I've seen that story appear on a number of different forums via a number of different outlets. Not one of them points out that U.S. District Judge Taylor McNeil was a Trump appointee. Why? That's all I want to know. Why? How is that not a pertinent and salient fact among the who, what, when, where, why, how, and how much? You know, maybe why. Why was this young woman allowed to live and present as her feminist self, only to be told that she had to cross-dress as a boy and do actual mental harm to herself in order to graduate with her peers? Well, she didn't put on the boy drag. She didn't go to her graduation. Girl, go somewhere, learn a lot, be fierce. Don't ever forget. And don't ever, ever forgive. Someone is on the stress line. We have a $25 challenge on the table, courtesy of Ralph's. It would be nice if that could be met. It's been kind of thin since Thursday because Friday was a bust, and then yesterday we raised $80. And today we're a goose egg so far. All help is wondrous, wonderful help. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Robin, it's me, Randy from Decatur, Georgia. Long time no see or hear from you.
Well, hey, Randy, Reggie, I'm sorry.
Reggie,
how are you?
Okay, just fine. You, talking about, speaking of trans people, you had our very own friendly neighborhood, Megan, only Santa Claus and Jesus can both be white,
right,
attacking Charlize Theron you know, attacking award-winning actor Charlize Theron for defending trans people and drag queens. And Megyn Kelly said to Charlize Theron, "Why don't you come down there to wherever I am, to exactly wherever I am, and quote-unquote fuck her up," which what Charlize Theron said, if anybody messes with trans people and drag queens, that she would fuck somebody up. Charlize Theron said that.
Well, Charlize is a bad bitch, and I mean that in a good way.
Yeah, she is. Right? And remember the old school saying, Robin, Megyn Kelly, she'd be careful of what you wish for, because you just might get it. Right?
That is a thing. That is a thing. I don't think Charlize Theron would throw away her brilliant career on getting sued by the likes of Megan, of course, Santa is White Kelly. She's just, Megan Kelly's not relevant. Megan Kelly is a troll.
Why do we keep giving this troll a platform? We don't.
Sirius Satellite Radio, on the other hand, does.
Right. Why didn't they counsel her? You know, you always want to counsel Howard Stern, but he's not the real bad guy.
Well, there's all kinds of content on Sirius Satellite Radio, but I'll tell you, I find it hilarious that you got Howard, and I think there's multiple right-wing channels.
Yeah.
And all our side has is Sirius Left, and the last I checked, there's not a lot of listenable content there.
Well, why you say that, Robin? Exactly why you say that, Robin.
What do you mean?
Well, you said there's not too much to listen to on Sirius AM these days when it comes to liberal progressive.
Sirius Left? I don't think they care much or pay much attention to their content.
Right.
Because there's still a perception, Reggie, that our side doesn't listen to left wing radio.
That's a lie.
It is a lie.
Right, but it is a lie. It is a lie. Like you said, we listen, but as you said, Robin, there's not enough of us, meaning, you know, people like yourself and others out there. There's not nearly enough of people like you yourself, Robin Kincaid, and others on the left out there. You know, first the right wing conquered radio, then they conquered cable television, and now they want to try to conquer the internet. What's next for them?
Well, it's a constant battle, Reggie, because they don't stop. So that means we can't.
But I'll tell you
this much, Reggie. The fact that I've been doing this on a shoestring for almost 20 years.
Yeah.
Oh my gracious sakes alive!
Thank God for that.
That's something.
Go ahead.
And honestly, I don't know how many people there are who can create engaging content for three continuous hours, five nights a week. Now, that's me blowing my own horn a little bit, but there's not a lot of me out there. There's a few of us, not many.
Right. But like you said, both talk radio and cable television are, shall we say, conservative owned.
Sure. All the major media companies are owned by conservative corporations, and there's only a handful of them.
Even the internet, or am I wrong on that?
Internet.
Are they trying to conquer that?
Internet companies are owned by conservative corporations in large part.
Oh. So they finally conquered the internet too as well. Am I wrong on saying that?
Well, I mean, I don't. They're much better funded. Let's put it that way.
Right.
I mean, you can think about people like little Benny, my dry wife Shapiro. That guy's rolling in money. There's no consequences. There's no accountability for his hate. And, you know, he lives online.
Right.
I don't know.
Or as you mentioned.
Or
go ahead, Robert.
Or Matt Dysphoria Beard Walsh.
Right.
Who apparently is tweeting that they have plans. Now, this is a guy who refers to himself as a theocratic fascist, and he's not kidding. He doesn't say that ironically. He means it. And
right.
He tweeted recently that they have big plans for Pride Month.
Right.
I don't think that means
right.
that Matt's finally coming out.
Right.
Because
you remember
last summer, Reggie, when strictly by a stroke of dumb luck, a bunch of Nazis were prevented from causing mayhem at a pride gathering in what, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho?
Yeah, I think I'm
here we are. There was a U-Haul truck full of Nazis.
Yeah.
And they got arrested.
Yeah.
And then one person
right.
and then one anonymous person paid all their bail.
Right. Who was that anonymous person? I wonder.
I don't know. You know, the usual suspects come to mind. You know, Leonard Leo.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe Har Har Crow.
Right. He must have had a whole lot of money in order to do that. You know.
Yeah. Well, I mean. The bail wasn't much anyway.
Right. 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 Or the aforementioned Megan, Lily Snow White Kelly, you know, saying that only Jesus and Santa Claus can both be white, like you said on Sirius XM, you know, going after trans people and drag queens, and it's a basic bleached, blonde-haired, blue-eyed troll. You know what I'm saying? You don't mind if I say that about her, do you, Robin?
No, not at all. She is a troll.
You know, yeah. He's a troll. But we're not feeding the trolls, but the lamestream mainstream news media is. Or am I wrong on saying that, Robin?
They give her more air than she is entitled to.
Yeah, right. But like I said, they want to get rid of Howard Stern, who's also a serious XL. But he's far way too much, and he's far much way too powerful for even them to get rid of. So you know, Howard's been doing talk radio since what, the 80s? Right?
Every bit. His career goes a lot further back than that.
Right. Or the 70s, you know? Right. But we know who he is. Not too many people know who Megyn Kelly is. Correct? Correct? People know who he is. So, do you think they'll reach their deal in the debt ceiling before June 1st or not? You know, President and Congress.
I want to hope so,
but
the fact remains that we're talking about a Republican Congress that doesn't care if the whole country burns to ash.
Right. And why is he trying to appease them?
Because he's serious about the oath that he took to the Constitution.
Yeah, right. And they're not.
They're not. They're not even serious about governing.
No, they're not. So they got in there to raise hell, you know?
They got in there to make mischief.
Yeah, right. But the whole country is suffering with that, right, Robin? The whole country is suffering. The whole world is suffering, I think.
It has the potential, if one is to believe the chairman of the Federal Reserve, among others, to plunge the entire world into global economic meltdown.
Right. What are we going to do about that once it happens, Robin? What can we do?
Well, what we can do...
What exactly can we do?
Vote, get in the streets, protest. But,
yeah.
But I know what the Republicans will do.
What?
The minute we default, they'll say, it's all Joe Biden's fault.
How can it be his fault?
Because he didn't give in to their ransom demands.
Right, which are obviously... That's true.
Yeah. Are you doing okay, Reggie?
Yeah, I'm doing just fine.
It's good to hear from you.
What about... Go ahead, Robin.
No, you.
Oh, go ahead. And what about Marjorie Taylor Greene gangrene going after a black man when they were both arguing outside of the halls of Congress or outside of the building
before AOC came in? Outside of the Capitol.
Building?
I've been where they got into it a dozen times.
Whoa. Well, and how do you feel about that, Robin? Well, you know, AOC came in and took him away and said it wasn't worth it. Was she right or wrong about that?
She ain't worth it.
No, I mean, he was arguing with her.
And AOC was right when she told Jamal Bowman, come on, she ain't worth it. Marginal trailer queen ain't worth it.
Right. Right. She was quote unquote threatened by him. You know? She said she was threatened by him, but that was a lie. But he was more threatened by her because she didn't use a dog whistle.
Yeah, she's just a stone cold racist.
Bullhorn.
Yeah, she's just a stone cold racist, period.
And a white supremacist.
You know, you don't have to be a member of the Klan to be a white supremacist.
Right. Right, that's true. And he was more threatened than she was because, you know, as a black man in this country, anything a white woman says against them will get him killed. Correct?
Yeah. Without a doubt.
Or locked up in prison, huh?
Without a doubt.
Right. So she was wrong, man. She was wrong. Isn't this the exact same woman who yelled through AOC's male peephole or something at her office or the mail slot? Years ago?
That one evades me. That one evades me.
Yeah. You know, she was, you know, yelling at her to come out and try to debate her, and she wouldn't give her the time of day. Right?
That sounds right.
Yeah, but that's true. That's true. That's true. That's true.
Well, Reggie, I hope you have a great evening. It's lovely hearing from you.
Yeah, I hope you have a great evening too, Robin. How's the weather out there in your neck of the woods?
Oh, we finally had some nice stuff, and it's just getting nicer. It was sunny and beautiful today, and it just did my soul so much good.
Well, it's been cooled off since yesterday. It rained here yesterday. Hard. Like cats and dogs. Like cats and dogs.
Yeah. And
how about you?
I'm sure it's plenty humid. No, we had some rain Saturday, but it was beautiful Sunday and nice yesterday and nice today. It's refreshing to see a little bit of sunshine.
Right. And how do you feel about Nitwit Nero yelling at Caitlin Collins last week on that disgraceful CNN town hall meeting?
How do you yourself
feel about that, Rob?
It's that old Denny Green clip on YouTube. He is who we thought he is. He's disgusting.
Yeah, right.
And in the stack, and I'm going to go to it next. He got a talking to. By the courts today. Particularly the Manhattan court that will be trying him for the felonies relating to his payoff of Stormy Daniels.
Right. Right.
And I'm gonna get right into that. Reggie, you have yourself a lovely afternoon. I hope
you do too, Robin.
I hope things stay good for you. You stay
safe.
Yeah,
you too, Robin.
All right. Bye
now. You too, Robin. Now don't work too hard.
Well, every day.
Don't work too hard. All right.
Take care, Reggie. Bye. That's Reggie down in Decatur, Georgia. And going back to the graduation story in Mississippi, Stan. Subject line, graduation. Matt in San Francisco writes, now, Ms. Robin, we can't have the transgenders just parading across the stage in their authentic wares, being all themselves and whatnot. Why, if that's allowed, how many innocents in the audience might catch it? Not to mention the town elders have their willies grow when they see such things. So that right there shows you how evil it all is. Now, everyone, just calm down and take a deep breath. And Superintendent King, you might want to clear your browser history. Matt writes tongue-in-cheek, but there's a lot of truth to it. The people who yell the loudest are the ones who are most frequently fapping away over at X-Hamster and Pornhub and Pornhamster and X-Hub and wherever else. Transporn are us. Ugh. But I'm not wrong. Oh, and Nitwit Nero got hailed into court on a protective order over the discovery in his felony case.
He appeared virtually. I can't be in New York. I can't be there. I'm busy. I'm campaigning. I'm going to be president again.
So, the judge, Marshawn, asked him in real time, Mr. Trump, do you have a copy of that protective order? And he said, yes, I do. And then his pettifogger, some guy who also will probably not be paid, named Todd Blanche, said, yes, Your Honor, I've read the order and I have discussed it at length with my client. He went on to say, because President Trump is running for president of the United States, he is very much concerned that his First Amendment rights are being violated by this protective order. But he said, I did explain to him it's not a gag order. Not yet. Then, with the hearing barely over, his tiny and yet somehow fat little thumbs were furiously thumbing away on his phone.
Just had New York County Supreme Court hearing where I believe my First Amendment rights, freedom of speech, quote, quote, have been violated, and they forced upon us a trial date of March 25th, right in the middle of primary season. Very unfair, but this is exactly what the radical left Democrats wanted. It's called election interference, and nothing like this has ever happened in our country before.
Michael Cohen went on to say, he's not going to be able to live with the order. He gets blinded by his anger in situations like this. Well, Mr. Trump, do you know what contempt of court is?
Yes.
Do you know I hold contempt powers over you?
Yes.
Do you want to be in contempt of court?
No.
And, of course, he's still running his mouth about E. Jean Carroll. He was still griping again today over his rickety wheels falling off social media crap form.
I don't know E. Jean Carroll. I never met her or touched her, except on a celebrity line with her African-American husband, who she disgustingly called the ape. I wouldn't want to know or touch her. I never abused her or raped her or took her to a dressing room 25 years ago in a crowded department store where the doors are locked. She has no idea when or did anything else to her except deny her fake made-up story that she wrote in a book. It never happened is a total scam, unfair trial. The Carroll case is part of the Democrats' playbook to tarnish my name and person. Much like the now fully debunked Russia hoax, the 51 intelligence agents, the FBI Twitter files, and so much more. It's being funded and tried by Democrat operatives, although this was denied by them, and when they got caught in the lie, the Clinton-appointed judge would not let us use it in trial. Time will prove him to be highly partisan and very unfair. Where's the dress she said she had?
I think she's gonna get more money. Maybe a lot more money.
Except for her African-American husband.
You mean like Ginsurrectionist Thomas's African-American husband there, Nitwit Nero? Yeah. But I say it here and it comes out there. Right there on my filthy morning habit this morning. We went after Josh Hall and ass last night, and lo and behold, I mean, I'm not saying there's a connection or anything, but they're beginning to have their own degree of fun with Josh Hall and ass.
Manhood. You'd hope that means courage. Courage isn't something you can give speeches or write a book about. It's not sitting on the sidelines while others sacrifice, or denying help to those who did. It isn't putting people down or trying to control them, or using your own power for profit or ambition. In Missouri, you can't fake courage. We're the show me state. Courage is something you have to show us. It shows in the working class people that pitch in to help the family next door bankrupted by medical bills. It shows in the Marine who signed up to honor and serve the community that took care of him. It shows when a Missourian stands up to the powerful, when he fights to rebuild his state, to empower people, to secure our future. If you want to be told about manhood, some guy wrote a book about it. But if you want someone to show you courage, send Lucas Kuntz to the Senate.
Jen Palmieri, Lucas Kuntz, that's his second really powerful ad that I've seen so far this cycle. The question is, in Missouri, does he have a shot?
I mean, Missouri is a tough state, right? Jason Kander had really good ads in Missouri as well. Also a veteran, and you know, he did not succeed in winning his Senate race. But at some point, you know, voters have free will. And at some point, you know, we talked about in the earlier segments how facts matter, how the fact that Comer is not coming up with any facts to prove his allegations about the Biden family, that matters. Trump being held accountable for what he says matters. It has consequences. And, you know, Josh Hawley is, you know, the footage of him running out of the Capitol, the footage of him, things that are at odds with what he claims to be, and then how he votes, how he represents Missouri, how he acts in a time of crisis like we're seeing right now. Those things do still matter to voters. So could this happen in Missouri? Sure, a good candidate running a great campaign and he's off to a good start. When you have someone on the other side that is racking up hypocrisies, I think that can still matter.
Yeah, well, also, obviously, when you have somebody on the other side that took an active part and stirring people up to overthrow the United States government, like Josh Hawley did, to riot that day, who tried to overthrow a presidential election. Yeah, I would hope the people in Missouri might actually just give a damn about that. Let's bring in Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist and associate editor of the Washington Post, Eugene Robinson. Gene, you saw the ad. What do you think?
I thought it was a really good ad. It's a really good ad. I mean, it, you know, it goes right at Hawley's manhood thing, which is, I guess, I don't know what he's trying to do with this, but I'll tell you, he's not exactly a Schwarzenegger. He's a terrible senator. I think his record, we've seen what he did on January 6th. We've seen his record in the Senate, which is quite undistinguished. And so let's see if Coons can do it. Missouri is a tough state, as Jen said. It's a very red state. But Josh Hawley, you know, we'll see if he could be a vulnerable candidate running for reelection.
One hopes. And by the way, the voiceover on that ad was by John Hamm of Mad Men fame. And Hawley is such a little punk. I love the fact that Eugene Robinson refers to it to his manhood thing. Some guy wrote a book about it. And the video to the ad shows the listing on the listing, I presume it's on Amazon. All kinds of quotes. He made popcorn to watch the Iraq invasion. And then there's other notes. Roy Blunt and Hawley vote to stall bill expanding health care for veterans exposed to burn pits. So, you know, there's that. Josh Hawley, abortion is not a right. It should be barred by American law. Hawley joining SCOTUS brief in his capacity as a senator in support of his wife's case to ban abortion pill nationwide. Yeah, remember her? I remember when she testified. She's garbage. It begins a message from John Hamm, born and raised in Missouri. Some guy wrote a book about it. And the rating was like 1.2 stars. There it is. 1.21 stars.
A free society that despises manhood will not remain free.
Sure, Josh. The masculine virtues America needs. Cue Yakety Sacks with him running for his life from his own terrorists. And then there's the latest Har Har update. And by the way, thank you to Randy Radar. Randy met Ralph's challenge. Ralphs never fails to support this program, and I concur for the match. Thank you, Randy Radar. Thank you. That's so kind. And thank you, Ralphs. So we are down to 168 bucks, and we're done with last Wednesday. And anybody want to help out? Greatly appreciated. It's why this program continues to exist. Now back to, Har Har Crow and his man, Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Fappy Thomas. His collection of Hitler stuff, among other things, Har Har Crow calls it his Garden of Evil. And he talked to The Atlantic about it in the interview that we discussed previously. And probably, I'd say Jamelle Bouie is the most authentic and clear and cogent voice on the New York Times op-ed page. Jamelle Bouie said, I still find his decision to collect these statues so odd and so bizarre for a lot of the reasons you described, he said in talking to Lawrence O'Donnell. Yeah, let's just take it in his own voice. Kind of powerful.
Has Harlan Crow ever talked to his neighbor Jerry Jones about that day? There are no segregationists in Harlan Crow's Garden of Evil. There are no American slave owners in Harlan Crow's Garden of Evil. Harlan Crow claims to abhor Donald Trump, but there is no Trump statue in the Garden of Evil. Joining our discussion now is Jamelle Bouie. He is a columnist for the New York Times and co-host of the podcast Unclear and Present Danger. And Jamelle, as I was reading that article today with those comments by Harlan Crow, I was just waiting for the moment where I could just hand you the microphone and get your reaction to it.
How do I say this? I still find his decision to collect these statues so odd and so bizarre for a lot of the reasons you describe. He says that they're there to commemorate the victims of atrocities, but one does not honor the victims of atrocities with statues of the people who committed the atrocities, right? Like there's no statue of Bin Laden at Ground Zero. That doesn't make any sense. His sense of what constitutes sort of the great evil of the 20th century seems like very narrow in a way that is unusual. As you mentioned, he doesn't seem to have any connection to U.S. history or any of the terrible things that happened in our own history. The entire project, such that it is very strange. And in that interview, his attempts to explain it, to contextualize it, just for me, raise many more questions about what he's thinking than they provide any answers. It's all very strange, all very strange.
And, you know, the Atlantic ignored the other person who's always there when Clarence Thomas is on these adventures with Harlan Crow, and that is Virginia Thomas. That is Clarence Thomas's wife. What conversations has he had with her? Harlan Crow claims to be adamantly opposed to Donald Trump, but he wasn't asked who he voted for president. He claims to favor abortion rights, which makes it really interesting to ask, what are your conversations with Mrs. Thomas like?
That's a great point. Harlan Crow's stated political goals in terms of the kinds of candidates he funds, the kinds of organizations he provides money for, the support he gives to the conservative legal movement, is in direct tension with the political values he holds, in direct tension with his stated opposition to Donald Trump, in tension with his apparent support for abortion rights. And again, if he's having conversations with Virginia Thomas, who is a right-wing political activist with very strong conservative views, it's, again, tough to understand how he rationalizes and thinks about his friendship with the Thomases in terms of his own stated political beliefs. Reading that Atlantic interview, it almost made me think of Harlan Crow, and this is taking him at his absolute word, right? This is sort of taking the framing of the piece, the framing of the interview, and taking him at his own word. It makes him seem like basically a like low information voter, right? Mm-hmm. Someone who a low information voter who just happens to have $1 billion.
Yeah, and a born billionaire who's never explored the thinking outside of that bubble he was born into. Jamelle Bouie, thank you very
Yeah, bubble. But all of this comes amid the fact that the Senate of the United States, the Committee on the Judiciary, has sent a letter asking Har-Har to come and speak to them. No subpoena. But responding, Michael DeBop, I mean, his email address is literally mbop. He's with the law firm of Gibson Dunn. And Mbop actually had the nerve to tell the Senate Committee on the Judiciary and their chairman, Dick Durbin, that the Congress has no right. I don't know how he dictated this without giggling maniacally. Congress has no right to investigate the Supreme Court or to pass legislation regarding Supreme Court ethics.
The committee has not identified a valid legislative purpose for its investigation and is not authorized to conduct an ethics investigation of a Supreme Court justice.
Really? It says him. And he goes on for some several pages, seven to be precise.
And please feel free to have your staff contact me with any questions concerning this response.
Good God. That takes some brass. How the hell do you impeach a Supreme Court justice?
Well, Congress does not have the right to impeach a Supreme Court justice. No right at all.
It's not playing very well. Dick Durbin said, Harlan Crowe believes the secrecy of his lavish gifts to Justice Thomas is more important than the reputation of the highest court of law in this land. He's wrong. Over on the House side, Representative Ted Lieu said the memo was dumb. Congress has the authority to investigate the executive branch. Of course Congress has the authority to investigate the judicial branch. Also, what's Harlan Crowe hiding from the American people? Accountable.us via its president Kyle Herrig said it was Justice Thomas's decades-long improper financial relationship with billionaire benefactor Harlan Crowe that sparked the Supreme Court corruption crisis, which has now reached a fever pitch. It's no surprise that Crowe continues to operate as though he and Thomas exist above the law, but they don't, and they must be held accountable. Chief Justice John Roberts has deflected his responsibility to clean up his court, forcing Congress to step in. Whether by Roberts or Congress, we need urgent reform to restore credibility and integrity for our court. Then Crewe, the Citizens for Ethics in Washington, said, if you don't think there's a connection between Harlan Crowe and Clarence Thomas's friendship and the kinds of decisions Clarence Thomas has been making from the Supreme Court bench, well, then we have some news for you. Midas Touch was not to be left out. Harlan Crowe is not on the Supreme Court, but it's understandable why you might think he is due to his apparent corrupt influence on right-wing Supreme Court justices. Among other, then someone else noted, Harlan Crowe's lawyers, that would be Mbop. Mbop, but now it's going to be stuck in my head. Damn it! Harlan Crowe's lawyers need to reread Article 3 of the U.S. Constitution. Appointment to the bench is not a lifetime appointment, but is contingent upon continued good behavior of the justices. It is up to Congress to define good behavior, a.k.a. code of conduct. Barbara Malmet said Harlan Crowe's word is garbage, like his Garden of Evil. The Lincoln Project said, No Labels doesn't mind right-wing racist dog whistles. No Labels megadonor Clarence Thomas subsidizer BFF Harlan Crow collects and proudly displays Nazi memorabilia, including Hitler's teapot and table linens. They dismiss it as nothing but noise. Oh, it's noisy, all right. Mr. Mbop makes you almost think that... by the way, going back to the judge in Mississippi for a second, I left one salient fact out. Yeah. He's a member of the Federalist Society, because of course he is. Want to bet Mbop has been to a meeting or two? Yeah, me either. Well, listen, stand by for a sec. We've only got the Green News report this week because Brad and Desi are taking next week off for the holiday weekend. So let's see what those wacky kids are into, and then we'll go to the phones.
It's Tuesday, May 23, 2023.
These states essentially agreed to take less water from the Colorado River.
Western states reach landmark agreement to stave off multi-decade drought crisis. World's lakes are shrinking due to human overuse and climate change. Plus,
last year's election in November changed everything.
Minnesota legislature poised to enact landmark environment and climate legislation.
All of those landmarks and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
It is the number one challenge in the world. A civilizational challenge unprecedented in scale and scope. And it is really striking that as we begin the official 2024 campaign, this issue, the most important one, the central civilizational challenge of our time, is utterly and completely absent and ignored from all Republican political campaign discourse.
Mission accomplished. This is your Green News Report.
Republicans don't care. Truly do not care if we melt the earth.
Okay, Desi Doyen, big news. We've been talking about this now for a few months, the water wars, if you will, out west. Now, maybe a truce?
Maybe. The Colorado River Basin states have agreed to cuts in water use to prevent the river from running dry amid an historic mega drought, the Bureau of Reclamation announced on Monday. California, Arizona, and Nevada have agreed to cut back on river water use by 13% over the next 3 years. That will be split up among farmers, tribes, and cities in exchange for more than $1 billion in compensation from the federal government, funded by the Inflation Reduction Act.
So if you give me money, then I won't drink water?
No, if you give me money, then I won't plant these really expensive, thirsty crops. Because remember, agriculture is the primary user of the Colorado River.
Good point.
The cuts are necessary to preserve the operation of rapidly declining western reservoirs, Lake Mead and Lake Powell. If finalized after a federal environmental review, this short-term deal would bridge the gap until the really difficult negotiations of allocating what is left of the Colorado River, which are set to start in 2026.
So this gets us through to 2026, at least. That's good. And all of this made possible, really, because we had a really wet winter out here for a change in California.
It certainly helped a lot for this negotiation, but it's not going to last much longer.
Okay, Little Miss Negative.
In Colorado, despite the ongoing mega drought, a new analysis shows that fossil fuel companies in the state actually doubled their withdrawals of the state's freshwater resources for fracking over the last 10 years. And that even as oil and gas production declined in the state. Data obtained by nonprofit group Frack Tracker Alliance also found that Colorado's drillers generated enough wastewater to supply their own fracking operations without draining the state's precious freshwater resources.
They just don't care.
Globally, the world's lakes are shrinking. A new study found that nearly 2,000 of the world's largest lakes have shrunk by trillions of gallons of water per year since 1992. The researchers say the decline of lakes lakes is primarily attributable to human overuse and human-caused climate change, intensifying drought and shifting rainfall patterns. Even in regions seeing more extreme rainfall, the drier, hotter atmosphere generated by global warming is sucking up even more water through evaporation. Competition for declining lake water has major implications for agriculture, power plants, and drinking water around the world.
So let the water wars continue, I guess.
But some good news. The Environmental Protection Agency has moved to close a loophole that exempted hundreds of toxic coal ash waste dumps around the nation from clean water regulations. For the first time, utility companies would be forced to clean up toxic coal ash waste generated by burning coal for electricity. Studies have shown coal ash waste impoundments are leaching toxic heavy metals into groundwater supplies. The EPA also proposed new rules to crack down on polluted waste water from coal-burning power plants that is dumped into rivers. Finally, Minnesota lawmakers have agreed to enact historic environment and climate legislation that invests more than $2 billion to decarbonize the state and accelerate its clean energy transition. It also addresses environmental justice and includes the toughest regulations on PFAS forever chemicals in the country. The funding will go to solarize schools and public buildings, electrify homes, incentivize electric vehicles, build an EV charging network, and more. Here's Ellen Anderson, a former state legislator who now heads the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy.
It's the most transformational year we've had in climate and energy policy. It's a game-changing year that we're having at the state capitol in terms of our approach to climate and energy and what we're doing to move our state forward dramatically.
It's amazing what you can do when you get rid of gerrymandering and the people get to vote for who they want and they end up voting for Democrats and a whole bunch of stuff gets fixed. Imagine that. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
All right, then. We are almost done with the second hour of the program of this Titanic Tuesday. Once again, it's been content rich. Had a note from Matt in San Francisco. Harlan, har-har. Now, Robin. Harlan bought his justice fair and square. Isn't that the truth? Steve in New York, however, says, oh, wait a minute, Matt. Everybody knows that Har Har Crew threw the fourth brick at Stockwell. I don't do it as well as you. Fuck Dick Durbin, Steve in New York says, stop with the talk. Subpoena plus inherent contempt. Seriously, this is just getting ridiculous. You would like to see a little hardball played, wouldn't you? Ralph's asked earlier, given the tantrum that Nitwit Nero threw immediately after his hearing today, does Judge Marchand hold a contempt hearing on Trump in the next week? Actually, I don't think he'll go straight to contempt. He'll go from protective order to gag order, and then when you violate the gag order, it makes the contempt ever so much easier. Just guessing, of course. Let's run over to the Skype line. By the way, if you want to reach the program via Skype, I am operating on a new Skype account, Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid Horn, K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, and just send me a contact request on Skype if you want to get through that way. But Scott's with us right now. Hey, Scott.
Hey, I guess I got through okay.
You did.
I must have the new Skype doohickey.
Thingamajig.
Whatchamacallit.
Flagellate. Knuton valve.
Never mind. That's all I'm... You're way ahead.
Don't start with me.
Yeah, I know. I should know by now. I don't know. I saw that... remind me to talk about water in the western states, because I had something to add on that. But I saw that segment with... Lawrence O'Donnell and about the statues, the little sculpture garden in the back of
the Garden of Evil.
Yeah, the Garden of Evil. I couldn't help but get an image in my mind's eye of Mr. Crow, a lush green expanse behind his mansion, palace, wherever the fuck he lives, on a checkered tablecloth, reclining on the ground with a picnic dinner surrounded by his statues. And I'm thinking, good God, somebody needs to look in the yellow pages, if such things still exist, and see if there's an outfit, a commercial outfit called Rent a Pigeon. Pigeons are us or something. And send about 4,000 recently fed, richly fed, completely stuffed with their grain.
Shit on pigeons. Hitler.
Yes. Just let them, and get them tanked up on some noxious, hallucinogen or something. Because there's nothing better.
Give them some pigeon metformin.
Yeah, exactly. Get those little feathered friends of ours in there to do a number on Mr. Crow and his fucking Garden of Hatred, Garden of Evil. Jesus. The way my mind works, it's a wonder I haven't been put away in a place with inflatable wallpaper or just sent off to Guantanamo or somewhere.
Your mention of pigeons immediately, Scott, took me back to the late great prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him.
Yes.
Talking about visiting Dealey Plaza and saying that on November 22nd, 1963, groups of disaffected Cuban pigeons were seen drinking in bars saying, coo, coo.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. God, Bill Hicks. We could sure use him now. And another one that we could use and could have used during the time of Trump, back when he was actually in office, was George Carlin. I repeatedly found myself wondering, I wonder what George would have to say about this, during the reign of error. Or no, that was Bush. Well, you know what I mean.
The nightmare pseudo-presidency?
Yes.
Well, you're giving me an idea, Scott.
All right. I do that sometimes.
You are. Because, I read a story the other day. I've yet to listen to it because it wasn't an openable link. But I read a story the other day that some AI bot has actually written and recorded a new Beatles song.
Really?
It's not based on anything John, Paul, George, or Ringo ever wrote.
So it doesn't start Try to See It My Way?
No.
No singing, I'm sorry.
But people that heard us, it sounds like a freaking Beatles. Well, and apparently this is one of those things that people who worry about the future things are worrying about right now. ChatGPT is driving high school and college teachers absolutely bananas because students are using them to write plagiarized papers.
Yeah.
And
plagiarize. Let nobody else's work evade your eyes.
Tom Lehrer. Yeah. So there's that, and the music industry. God, I bet they're looking back and going, and we were worried about Napster.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it hadn't been for Napster, there'd be no Apple Music. Because they.
Oh, I know.
They figured out a way to capitalize on it. With crappy compressed music that is slowly getting better. But there is worry in that industry about AI bots just making like a new Taylor Swift song or a new, and And you can see where that would be a can of worms of epic proportions. But you just, like I said, you just gave me an idea. And I like the idea you just gave me.
Well, come on.
I think we should prompt an AI bot to write a new column by Hunter Thompson. There could be a George Carlin bot doing George, because like with that Beatles song, it's amazing how close to the Beatles it is. What if AI could give us Bill Hicks for the modern day, or Hunter Thompson, or George Carlin?
All of these things are technically possible, but then you run into the problem. You know, artists and authors and other luminaries in recent decades or their estates have gotten hip to the thing of they're very protective of the protected works of the people. And you almost have to do it on a parody kind of basis. Because we live in a litigious world. I see no downside with the thing. The more fun you can poke at these numbskulls, the better off I think the rest of us are. It may not necessarily change anything, but at least we're entertained along the way. You know, as the trucks pull up and carry us all off to the home for regrooving or whatever. But yeah, I mean,
it would be at least interesting. And you know, I've already seen an AI produced Biden ad, and it was funny. God.
What was that? What was that like?
Jack, they talk about I'm old, but have you seen that bloated orange fuckstick over there that thinks he's going to run against me? Come on, Jack.
Is he wearing the aviators?
Yes.
Oh dear. Well, the 24 cycle is not my idea of a good time. What with the myriad of ways of rat fucking, you know, the campaigns on that side can do. I mean, I'm sure we do our own share of it, but who knows what to believe? Given the technical state of things, you know, I think there was a quote about, I only believe half of what I hear and none of what I read. Or, do you know that quote or the one I'm trying to think of?
Yeah, and I can't get it any better than you got it.
Well, between the two of us, there's not a whole man or woman on the show, Mr. Crow. Yes, summon the pigeons. Come hither, pigeons. Just stuff them with the highest quality grain that you can and send them on their way. How many would you need? How many statues does he have? Wasn't there a Mel Brooks movie? Was it High Anxiety where there's, before it's over, there's like pigeon shit everywhere? Or was that from a fever dream that I had?
I think you're good.
The mayonnaise budget on that picture was stupendous. I mean, they're still, one of the studios is still trying to pay for it. Splat, splat everywhere. But anyway, water in the West. Let me get serious for a minute. I remember, this was when I lived in Cincinnati. This was like shortly after moving to Cincinnati in early 1996. That spring or summer, I guess, I decided with my lady friend and her young daughter, decided to take a road trip from Cincinnati to D.C. It was my last visit to D.C. in 96. I may have made one more after that, but I think it was my either last or next to last visit to Disneyland on the Potomac. And my mom was still around then. And we drove in the truck to visit. And we went, my younger brother got us, when he was still working at the White House, got us in for a, what they call a congressional tour, which is a little more involved than the public tours of the White House. Did they ever bring those back, or are those gone for good? Just parenthetically.
I don't know.
I remember with the terrorism thing, and then God knows with the COVID, there were a lot of things that you used to be able to do as a group that you probably can't do anymore. If you do, you got to, you know, wear a fucking NASA suit of some sort, a lab suit in the lunar receiving lab where they took the rocks after not landing on the moon. That was all faked, you know. But wrestling is real. The moon landing was fake. So that's how I keep it straight. But anyway, we went. I'm off my train of thought. No, so we're staying at my mom. We're visiting my mom, staying at a motel. And on the local PBS station, WETA, Channel 26 in Washington, we caught one of the episodes back then in the mid-90s of a four-part film series, documentary series, called Cadillac Desert. Have you ever seen?
Oh, yes.
And that was kind of a heads up way back then, 1996, I think it was. It says 1997 on YouTube, but I remember seeing it in 96. A four-part series about the situation looming. We were well aware of what was going to happen if we didn't change our ways. But the precious water supply, Mandrake, our precious essence, our fluids, was...
Purity
was,
of essence.
It was going to be strongly diminished. I mean, horrendously diminished. And water, I don't know which one of the food groups it is, but it's an important part of our Wonder Bread years and beyond. You know, you don't last too long without water. But anyway, those segments are on YouTube. If anybody wants to see the heads up that we managed to ignore, you know, just marching off to Armageddon, liquidly speaking, it's on YouTube if anybody wants to check it out, because we had plenty of a heads up. We all knew what the situation would be if we didn't conserve. And
it wasn't a secret.
No, it was, I mean, public television has what? How many affiliates? 188 around the country, maybe more? I don't know.
Got to be more.
But, and it's worth a watch. It holds up. It's depressing as hell, you know, because it comes under that general heading of lessons not learned, warnings not heeded, you know? And how many times have we done that before? But yeah, get those pigeons. Get the highest quality grain that you can. Where's Mr. Crow live? D.C., probably?
Dallas.
Oh, Dallas. Did I just hear piano music?
Yes, you did, because Matt sent this along just for you, because Matt said, I love high anxiety. High anxiety, you win. And this.
I don't hear. Oh.
High anxiety whenever you're near. High anxiety, it's you that I fear. My heart's afraid to fly. It's crashed before. But then you take my hand, my heart starts to soar once more. High anxiety, it's always the same. Ooh, anxiety, it's you
that I blame?
Madeline Kahn.
It's very clear to me, I've got to give in. My anxiety, you win.
Waiting for it.
Hiya, Tex. Where you from?
Cincinnati.
Great town. Love that big red machine. He's up on the linguine. Hello, young lovers, whoever you are. What do I spy? A little grain of rice? Newly married?
This morning.
This morning, folks, and they said it wouldn't last. But then you take my hand. My heart starts to soar once more. Heat change, high anxiety. It's always the same. Hey, anxiety. It's you that I blame. It's very clear to me, I've got to give in. My anxiety. And remember, folks, be good to your parents. They've been good to you. You win.
I love it. I love it.
Oh, I know.
I used to have, there was an album in the mid to late 80s, a vinyl album. All of the popular songs, the key songs from the various Mel Brooks movies. And I wish I had hung on to that thing. I don't have a turntable anymore, but I would at least like to have the album. I'm sure it's on CD, but it's like Springtime for Hitler and High Anxiety. And yeah.
Was it High Anxiety? Remind me, I'm a little that had the character of Professor Lil Allman. Or Dr. Lil Allman. Dr. Little Old Man. It's Lil Allman.
Oh, I don't know. He had a troop of players. Madeline Kahn, Kenneth Mars. God, I can't think of who all. Gene Wilder a lot of times.
Madeline Kahn.
Did I get the name right?
Yeah, but Madeline Kahn.
Floris Leachman.
Floris Leachman.
Oh, God, she was a hoot. She was a hoot and a half.
He was my boyfriend.
The horse was young Frankenstein. That's right. I forget.
Yeah.
God damn, I've got to revisit my Mel Brooks library because.
And you know why the horse whinnies every time Blücher gets said, right?
Tell me, because I. There was something kinky about the horse and
Bluch,
somebody.
Bluch is German for glue.
Okay, all right, yes, all right. Speaking of Mel Brooks, on Netflix, it's been there about a year, better part of a year, there's a documentary, and I think I talked about it once before. There's a documentary called The Automat. Did you ever see that?
I don't think so.
It's about, do you know what an automat is? Horn and Hard Art.
Oh, yes.
It's in New York and Philadelphia.
Right.
And I think other cities, I know they had them in Europe because that's where the idea came from. But for those who don't remember such things or never visited one, there was a time in America when it was lunchtime or dinner time, you could walk in, slap a dollar on the counter at the change place, and they'd give you 20 nickels, and you could buy, it was a wall full of windows with coin slots, and you would turn the knob and open up the little gate, and there was a piece of pie, or there was a macaroni and cheese, or baked beans, or whatever. And this was a way that people dined for a time in certain cities in this country and other places. But it's a lovely documentary. And there's even a theme song that Mel Brooks sings about the coffee at the automat. Coffee was dispensed from an urn, and sticking out of the urn was a dolphin's head or a porpoise. And you would put your cup under the thing, pull the thing, and it would dispense the coffee plus just the perfect dollop of cream. Watch that movie if you have Netflix.
And you know the funny thing is, the Horn and Hardart's are of course long since gone.
Oh yeah.
But and I'm pouring some water over my ice, so bear with me.
Oh. Do you only have ice for me, or is it just for you?
As soon as my hands aren't full, I will give you a cowbell for that god-awful pun. You have to let me put my bougie bottle down first.
Okay.
My distilled water.
I only have
ice for you. Oh, Jesus, Robin.
Are the stars out tonight? I don't know if it's cloudy or bright. Okay, that's what we...
We're at $1,368 in the hole.
And there okay? I am singing.
The singing doesn't help.
I'm sorry.
That's people. Okay. That's okay. But, you know, maybe it'll come down some from there. And, yes, in fact... It was in High Anxiety that Howard Morris played Professor Little Old Man. Professor Little Old Man! It's Little Old Man!
God, I must revisit some of my Mel Brooks movies because, I mean, the granddaddy of them was The Producers. I remember seeing that when it was in the theater originally, one of our neighborhood theaters in Alexandria. Over the summer, spring and summer, or whenever it was in town, easily three times. There's just something about that movie that just cracked me up every time, even though I could, by the third viewing, I could recite the dialogue and sing all the songs. And always wanted one of those, if I was going to ever perform drag, the German chorus girls in the actual show, the girl with the pretzels on her upper frontals, always kind of amused and amazed me. I don't know. She had carrying beer mugs and had pretzels on her dingers.
Tatas.
Tatas and toodly-doos. But anyway, goddamn, I'm weaving a tapestry verbally tonight that
yes, you are. You absolutely are. By the way, our buddy Ken in Northwest PA just wrote in, subject line, pigeon poop. Definitely High Anxiety spoof on The Birds.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, Dan says Cadillac Desert was based on a book by that name by Mark Reisner, published in 1986.
Yeah. So way back in 86, even. Someone had the good sense to know what the hell was ahead. I'm telling you, people.
Well, it's like that dried up lake in California on the eastern slope of the Sierra Nevada that I talked about last night, the story about all the thousands of years dead indigenous people that are being dug up for the road or have
been.
Are you
talking about the Salton Sea?
No. No, I'm not talking about the Salton Sea.
Oh.
This is an actual lake. It was the source material for the plot to Chinatown.
Oh, yeah.
And this 200-mile aqueduct ran from this lake to Los Angeles, and Los Angeles dried the lake up in just 40 years.
Oh, probably less than that. Yes, and Chinatown is one of my favorite movies.
I know, it's problematic because Roman Polanski's so damn gross.
I know. But I somehow, and it's the same in a way with Woody Allen, I can still appreciate the theatrical presentation.
Interesting you would mention that because just the other day I watched one of my favorite Woody Allen movies, and it's not one of the early classics, Midnight in Paris.
Oh, yeah.
I love that movie. And because you know, the right wing in-laws to be are just so utterly hateable and totally loathsome.
Yes.
It's kind of like hating Gene Hackman in The Birdcage,
which I watched the other night.
Oh, I think we probably watch that every other week or so. It's like if we're bored, we just put on The Birdcage and watch Robin Williams go nuts.
Well, Robin Williams and Nathan Lane.
Oh, the scene with the buttering and my one of my favorite lines is, of course, when Robin Williams, be masculine, walk like John Wayne. Everybody knows who John Wayne. Walk like. And Nathan does the John Wayne walk and
the cross between
and Robin's got this look on his face, and Nathan Lane said, "Did I do it wrong?" And he said, "No, I just never realized that John Wayne walked like that."
And I think John Wayne stole his walk from Jack Benny. There's a crossover somewhere. You ever see Jack Benny walk?
No.
Look on YouTube and see if you can find. He had a very interesting gait, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay, I got homework for after the show. Hey, thank you to Christopher. Christopher jumped in two evenings in a row. Thank you so much. Christopher just took us down to 1358. Thank you, Christopher, with a note, Scott's singing.
Oh, dear. Am I in trouble now?
That's the emoji with a straight mouth and one eyebrow raised.
Oh, dear.
But, hey, you helped knock down the fundraising by $10.
Well,
Thank you, Christopher.
I like cultural references which are applicable to what we're talking about, and more often than not, I miss it.
There we are, yes.
Sometimes I hit it. You know, so what can I tell you? But watch that movie, the documentary, The Automat. I've never actually, back in D.C. and Baltimore and places like that, we had cafeterias, which were not, they were not mechanized.
Get me started. I grew up with wonderful cafeterias. My father was a cafeteria fiend. He would prefer a cafeteria over a sit-down restaurant. I mean,
yeah,
you know, sitting down and being served and having it brought in. No, he loved to see all the food just sitting there waiting for our choices.
And that was the key to it. You get your tray, you get your silverware, you get your napkin, and you start down the line. And as a child, I liked the opportunity of picking my own little dishes. If I wanted creamed spinach that day, I could get it. If I wanted peas and carrots or succotash, I could get it. No suffering involved, by the way, Sylvester. But and then
you beat me to it.
You were a step ahead of me, but I've had more coffee by this time. So, but yes, good Lord, there was a. My maternal grandmother, who we called Nanny, would take me to a cafeteria in D.C. And this was the real deal. I was like just a child. And that was my big treat for my birthday. We would go to the cafeteria, and then she would take me to a movie in one of those big old movie palaces that so many of them no longer exist in big cities, and we just make a day of it.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah.
Gone are the days.
Yeah, of cafeterias. We didn't have automats, but we did have cafeterias.
Well, I grew up with it was called Barber's, and I think it was the same company that owned the Barber's Dairy. They were big down there. And there was a fierce competition among the Church of Christ's and the Methodists and the Baptists to see which preacher could get you out the door so you could get first in line at Barber's for Sunday dinner.
Oh, yeah, that was the tradition.
And they had the do you remember the giant, what are they called, steamship rounds, roast beef? Huge.
Oh, those
huge.
Were the, that has an attendant and a guard and a big knife
right.
a fork kind of thing
yes,
to hold
and,
it?
Yes, and just slicing it paper thin, however you want it, rare, medium rare,
Wofford
shoe thing. Leather. that and the, my father went wild over the macaroni and cheese. Wow, we haven't had a good food porn in a while. I, as a kid, fell in love with the carrot and raisin salad. Because the raisins would plump in the, with the mayo and the carrot. Oh, it's heavenly.
And that reminds me of another thing that I used to like a lot, Waldorf salad.
Oh, yeah, where, with the walnuts and the apples. And
the raisins and all, yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
but,
there was
I always got the trout almondine. I mean, we were talking about being, you know, 5 and 6 years old. Because the tartar sauce was just everything. And that is the tartar. And it doesn't exist anywhere in the store. You can't get anything like it. You can only have it if you have it homemade. They made it there. When they got taken over by Morrison's, they took the recipe with them. And I would have been happy with just a plate of the tartar sauce.
Well, that's like in the Cincinnati area and maybe other parts of Kentucky and Ohio and Indiana. And I don't know if it's still around even today. Frisch's.
I think we talked about Frisch's at one point. They were down into Kentucky, and there were and at one point, they and Shoney's were both associated with the big boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was in that part of the country, it was Frisch's big boy.
And where I was, it was Shoney's big boy, and the Schoenbaum family of Charleston, West Virginia, by the way. And I don't even know if Frisch's exists anymore, but Shoney's has fallen on hard times.
I'm sure.
And they were famous for their hot fudge cake, which was heavenly.
Ooh, I remember that.
And their strawberry pie, and of course a triple decker hamburger that just beat the daylights out of a Big Mac.
Did it have a name?
It was the Big Boy.
The Big Boy, yeah, yeah. And they were around, I think, even before Mickey D's, weren't they?
I want to say yes.
Yeah, because, I mean, McDonald's in its rudimentary form was just a hamburger stand in on the outskirts of Riverside or some such place here in California. One location, two brothers, you know, flipping flapjacks, or not flapjacks, but...
Yeah, there was a movie a couple of years back. I think Woody Harrelson played Ray Kroc.
No, the guy in Birdman.
Michael Keaton?
Michael Keaton, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a pretty good movie.
And Ray Kroc was, of course, a terrible racist and a conservative. And then his wife, Joan, gave all their fortune to, like, NPR just to stick it anyone last time. She the Joan Kroc Foundation... gives to really pretty kind of left causes.
Yeah, she's gone. She's been gone a number of years. Yeah. But they were based here because at one time he owned the Padres.
Right. Yeah, I remember.
Long before I was here, but yeah, you see a lot of places out here in San Diego with Joan Kroc's name attached to it, and that money is, I mean, they slung and flung those burgers for many years. And that money had to go somewhere, and a lot of it's going to pretty reasonably. She's a big public broadcasting supporter for her estate or whatever foundation. But anyway, I'm free associating all over the place. Stop me, Robin.
Stop it, Spock. Theo says you're thinking of the Owens River Valley, for which the self-taught civil engineer William Mulholland designed and promoted the Los Angeles Aqueduct. It's a 223-mile-long contraption which moved water from the Owens Valley to the San Fernando Valley, and it set off the California water wars. Being self-taught turned out to be a disadvantage to Mr. Mulholland. The St. Francis Dam, one of his major projects, failed in 1928, only 12 hours after he'd personally overseen a safety inspection.
Yeah.
I guess they named that road in L.A. Mulholland Drive.
Oh, yeah, back in his heyday, because he was bringing water to the City of Angels, you know. So I remember reading somewhere Now, what were the movies? There was Chinatown, and there was another Polanski film that Nicholson was in. It was supposed to be a trilogy, and it had to do with water.
The next one was The Two Jakes.
Yeah, The Two Jakes, which I didn't like as much as Chinatown, but I came to like it even more than I did when I first saw it. But there was supposed to be a third one about oil and the automobile and the highway system. And
that's Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
And the
demise of the red car.
Yeah, but that.
I'm kidding.
Okay. Well, see, I don't know. I was not a fan of Who Framed Roger Rabbit, but that's just me.
That is you. What's wrong with you?
I watched half of Idiocracy. Is that the name of it?
Yes.
And I'll do the other half tonight.
Okay, so I got a trivia thing for you. I'm not going to spoil it since you're not through it yet. But when I think this is true. When they were conceptualizing the idiotic America of the future.
Yeah.
Mike Judge, same guy who did Beavis and Butthead and King of the Hill. Mike Judge wanted the idiots of the future to all be wearing the same really stupid looking shoes. And they found a little startup company. And they ordered all the same shoes for the characters.
They're not Earth shoes, are they?
No, don't ask me. You and everybody else is going to have to go and notice them in Idiocracy.
Okay, well, I'll watch.
Because one of the questions was, well, what happens if these things become popular? And the answer was, look at these dumb things. That is never going to happen. Let's just say it happened, okay?
Yeah, okay.
By the way, somebody is on the stress line. Let's just get the conversation going in proper form.
Okay.
And add a third party. This is a party line. Sarah, get me Juanita down to the Bluebird Diner.
No, I want to call Mount Airy, Andy.
Mount Pilot.
Because the real place is Mount Airy.
Mayberry is Mount Airy, but Mount Pilot is Pilot Mountain, which is a real place. Never mind. I always did kind of want to go to Mayberry days, though.
And who was that group of bluegrass singers that would always come to town? The Dillards?
I think so. And they were headed, of course, there was a real actor who played the patriarch, and then
Denver Pyle,
and the daughter, the beautiful blonde daughter,
I can't remember her name,
and she had a terrible crush on Andy, but in the meantime, and here he is again, Professor Lilloman, Howard Morris, Ernest T. Bass,
oh yes,
was absolutely devoted to her.
Yes.
Hey, I like my new haircut, Andy. It's all slickety in the back. Andy, she called me a creature. He's a genius, Howard Morris. Okay, let's find out who's on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Fuck raisins.
Die mad about it.
You knew I was on hold. I was listening to the show, and you had to talk about raisins. It's like, that's the nasty.
Well, you can't. It ain't carrot and raisin salad without the raisins. Quit it.
Well, who?
And it's delicious. It is delicious. Quit it.
Okay. Whatever.
Don't come from a carrot and raisin salad, because then you're messing with some of my most fond and tender childhood memories.
Okay, you know, honey, I love you, and I love your childhood memories of fuck raisins.
Fuck my childhood memories, right? Gotcha.
It was a raisin. I'm a raisinist.
You are a grape supremacist.
Grape supremacist. So, it's, you know, and by the way, Scott, in answer to when out here, you guys were talking about the big boys out here, it was Bob's Big Boy, and it was established in the year that my mom was born, 1949.
Yeah, that's how I think you're right. You are right. You're often right.
No, I am right. No,
yeah, I know.
It's like, no, not big. I know. So, yeah, no. And actually, I was just at one of the original Big Boy in Toluca Lake the other day. And, I was having the hot fudge sundae cake.
And good for you, by God. I mean, this is America.
The
chocolate cake on the bottom, the slab of vanilla in the middle, and the chocolate cake on top, and just drowned in hot fudge with whipped cream and a cherry.
And you'd better have a designated
driver. Oh, and by the way, they have a double. We get a double out here. So it's the chocolate cake on the bottom, the slab of vanilla ice cream, then another piece of chocolate cake, and then another slab of vanilla ice cream topped with another piece of chocolate cake.
You know, if I had even half of a plate of that, I would go into a diabetic coma so quickly. I'd need a designated driver.
My sugar shot up to something.
Oh, Jesus. Mm-hmm.
But I was happy. You know, I eat my pain.
Well, by the way, I have since gotten a photograph of the Bluebell Dr. Pepper ice cream from Joy in Michigan. And I'm just dying for the want of it. I'm probably gonna have to drive into Kentucky to find somebody that carries Bluebell and get that shit. It's Bluebell homemade vanilla folded in with Dr. Pepper sherbet.
Oh my God.
Yeah, see? Yeah. You'd eat that shit if it had raisins in it.
No, I wouldn't.
Which, by the way, I'm pissed off because I was at Wally World the other day and there is no Haagen-Dazs rum raisin.
I called. I'm just kidding.
I halfway believe you.
No, stuff like that, I would pick the raisins out.
That's what a grape supremacist does.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. That part. But, you know, speaking of food porn, I sent the picture of the fried, my buttermilk fried chicken that I,
yeah,
the first
wow.
thing that I've cooked since Kimba died. I've been, you know, 2 weeks today. And it's like, at Ralph's, which is your Kroger, they had chicken the family packs of chicken. Buy one, get one free. And so Jam bought some drumsticks, and then she's like, well, they don't have breasts, and they have drumsticks in the picnic pack. I said, okay, get some drumsticks and get the picnic pack, because I feel like frying chicken. And so, you know, because if you go do fried chicken right, you can't, I mean, yes, you can make decent fried chicken the day of. It's like, okay. But if you want to do fried chicken right, you have to brine your chicken at least overnight. You know, it's not a fried chicken done right. It's not a spur of the moment thing. And I did it Saturday morning and threw it in the refrigerator overnight with the paprika, the cayenne, the onion powder.
The buttermilk, and you got to do the overnight. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And you had to, and so for my flour, I didn't use regular flour. I used self-rising flour. And it gives your, the crust, or whatever, extra kick. It makes it extra crunchy. I guess because of the yeast or whatever is in it, the extra salt or what have you. Oh my God, Robin. I don't remember the last time I've actually fried chicken. If memory serves. So, yeah, I'm slowly coming out of the whole Kimba funk. I still cry. Like, if I watch a commercial about dog food or whatever, I'm a wreck. But, you know, I'll be fine. So, you guys, I heard you talking about Mel Brooks movies, and I know y'all said something about Blazing Saddles.
We were high anxiety focused at the time.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, you know, that's just my favorite. Because Mel Brooks for me was hit and miss. I loved Young Frankenstein, and of course I loved, Blazing Saddles. Not so much High Anxiety. Maybe because when it came out, I don't know. That's something I need to rewatch. And the producers as well. I guess I just didn't get the humor back then. So it's something that I have to rewatch. And yes, I watch, The Birdcage at least once a month. Because if you're feeling all kind of different ways, and if you're just not just in a horrible funk, you cannot stay in that funk after watching The Birdcage. It's just not possible.
You're giving her drugs?
It's just
aspirin with the A and the S scraped off.
Oh God, Hank Azaria is just the whole, and like you said, Gene Hackman.
And he showed up. Hank Azaria showed up playing a character on The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel in the final season.
Oh really? I haven't watched it yet. I watched. Has the last season not finished?
No, it's not quite done.
Okay, I'll wait. But the last time I watched it was when she fucked up and got kicked off of the tour with the black singer for outing him.
Yeah.
And I haven't watched. That was the last season that I watched. So, but there's been one since then, and then the final one, right? So there's like two seasons now. After that season, I don't remember. I'll wait until.
And of course, you know what tonight is.
It is tonight. Today, I knew there was something about Tootsie. Yes.
Tonight is the next
to second to the last
Ted Lasso.
The next to the last episode.
I'm already beginning to grieve.
Yeah. I don't think I'll watch it tonight. I think I'll just wait until next week to watch the final episode. Just because I'm just, you know. But
I can't do that because I'm jonesing. And I don't know what's going to happen after May 31st.
Yeah, addict. But you know what I watched the other night on HBO? Well, now Max is no longer HBO Max. It is now just Max or whatever the fuck. Victor Victoria.
Oh, my.
And I was terrified because I haven't seen that. I literally have not seen that movie in decades. Okay. And I was like, oh, God, is it going to be terrible? No, still funny. Still fucking hilarious. And that's another one, Blake Edwards. You know, it's so funny to think of who, you know, Julie Andrews was married to, you know, Blake Edwards. And Mel Brooks was married to, oh, Jesus.
And Bancroft?
Mrs. Robinson.
Yeah, yes. And Bancroft.
And it's like when you think of those two people, you would never think that they would be married to, you know, actresses like you know, Julie Andrews and fucking Bancroft, you know, but you know, love is love.
Yeah, but Mel noted that Anne was freaking hilarious.
Well, yeah, she in her later years, the movies that she made when she got older. They were fucking hilarious. And I think about, like, was it Julie Andrews in SOB when she bared her breast? Andrews.
I love that movie. I love that movie.
Oh, my God.
William Holden, God. And who was the guy that was on Soap, played the father, one of the fathers?
Richard Mulligan, and what was his name?
Richard Mulligan. Was it Mulligan? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Mr. God, President, oh, you're drunk. My favorite Richard Mulligan line from Little Big Man. That along, hire the mule, Skinner.
Oh, yeah. Have you been watching?
Victor Victoria.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, I was just thinking about, and I would, you know, because I know you have Max, Robin, and mm-hmm. do you have HBO Max?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Do me a favor. If you know, your homework, rewatch Victor Victoria, and because I found it hilarious still. It's so funny because they don't do slapstick comedy anymore. And Robert Preston, God bless him. Oh God,
pro.
It doesn't get better than the detective who is there to investigate. Whether it's a man playing a woman playing a man or whatever the hell it is. And the scene in the bar at the very end where the guy that hires the detective pulls out a mallet. Oh, Jesus. It doesn't get any funnier than that.
When he's on the balcony, you know, and it's raining, he puts up the umbrella.
Oh, speaking of which, I don't even know if it's true, but this I just laughed and laughed when I saw this the other day. I saw a photo of Jamie Farr decked out in a yellow gown as Max Klinger, and it said, with Disney's acquisition of MASH, Klinger is now a Disney princess.
Oh, dear. I love it. Give that girl
that
a tiara.
Would be fucking awesome.
Have you been watching...
Give that girl the much-deserved tiara.
Tracy, on HBO Max, have you been... And Robin... I think Robin's been watching... White House Plumbers, did you see it last night?
Oh, God, not last night, but God.
Oh, strap yourself in.
White House Plumbers, it's the story of Howard Hunt Gordon Liddy.
I haven't watched it yet. I'm just waiting for a few more episodes to drop.
I will watch it after last night. Because it's only five episodes.
Because I know it's a limited series, so I have no problems waiting for all the episodes to drop because that's just, but, you know, I just the previews, and my favorite Latinx actor, Tony Cano, I love that man. I have been a fan of his since he was in Zoot Suit with Edward James Olmos.
Oh, wow.
He is the best character actor ever. Talk about underrated. There's so many things. There's certain actors that, you know, they play characters and they've been on TV shows. And I don't even know if he was ever nominated for an Emmy, but talk about give a man his flowers now. He should have been Emmy nominated for guest spots. He's so good. He is just, I love him. He is just, definitely, he's a treasure. He's a treasure. But, you know, people like that don't usually get nominated for shit. You know what I'm saying? For that part.
True. Of course, over on Max, I am now, I'm waiting for the return of Showtime because I just need more of that. And there's another Showtime, you know, the 80s Lakers story.
Oh, yes. Lakers out loud. Jan is still in a fetal position about how Denver swept the Lakers. So.
Oh, no, the Golden State.
No. Beat the Lakers. Beat Golden State. Denver swept them. They lost last night by 2 points. They had a chance to. They were down 3-0,
and they had it. They were very close to winning last night. To at least get the, 3-1, but they lost by 2 points last night. And it's gotten to the point that even LeBron James is actually now talking about retiring. Speaking of basketball.
And the other show on Max, I was going to mention, if you've never seen it, and it's coming up, it's next season's coming out this year too. Tokyo Vice. Awesome cop story and journalist story. And I would watch Ken Watanabe read the ingredients from a toothpaste tube.
Is it returning in Japanese
without subtitles?
Is it returning or soon to premiere?
No, it's returning.
Okay, because I remember putting it on.
What's the name of it, Robin?
Tokyo Vice.
Oh, Tokyo Vice. Okay.
It's basically about the first American guy to ever get a job writing for a Japanese newspaper.
And oh, my God.
And he gets all mixed up with the yak and everything. And yeah. No, it's a great show.
I'll have to check it out. So, after, did you finish watching Mrs. Davis?
No.
The last episode aired last week.
Yeah, but I'm taking it by bits and pieces because I can only process so much fucking weird at one time.
Todd. Scott, do you have Peacock?
Let's see. Do I? No, I don't.
Okay.
That's the cheapest streaming platform there is, and there's some good stuff on there.
There's some really good stuff on it. Of course, Poker Face. I know I'm not won't be coming back until next year, but still.
Or whenever, because of the writer's strike. I'm not that selfish. I'm with the writers. I mean, I believe in unions.
Oh yeah. Oh, speaking of which, the CEO of Time of Warner or HBO, whatever, he was the
the
speaker got booed and said the graduates not only booed him and turned their backs on him, they were chanting "Pay your writers."
Oh wow. That's the world we live in. There's enough money to go around, in today's world, and the creative. I mean, the words don't just jump off the fucking page and say themselves.
No.
I mean, the actors have to have lines to go by for the drama or the comedy or whatever it is. Pay the fucking writers.
The fucking writers. And speaking of people, realizing that they're horrible fuck ups, you heard that the Dodgers apologized.
But the fact that the Dodgers would let a little pipsqueak pissant like Marco Rubio and some gang of right-wing religious goons mess with pride in L.A.?
Girl, the backlash was
brutal.
It was because, Jed and I were going to go. I mean, I just remembered that we can't go because it's my best friend, it's her son's. He's graduating from high school that day, so we can't go to Pride. But I'm like, holy shit. You fuck with gay people in L.A.? Come on.
No.
Here's the funny part. So I guess it was two. They actually, I guess the the LA Angels or the Anaheim Angels, whatever they're called, they invited them, but so now they're going to both. As a result of what happened.
Oh, die mad LA, about it. Die mad about it, Marco Rubio.
Right. Piece of, you know. Because it's like, you know, I don't think it wasn't about the Dodgers' conscience or anything like that. It was about how much fucking money they were going to lose.
Yeah.
Because you already know the millions, how much money they spent on just the merchandising alone. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
We're talking, you know, I mean, they have the hats, they have the flags, the T-shirts, all that stuff.
And what was the nun group? The Sisters of?
Because of Perpetual Indulgence or something like that.
And didn't the Archdiocese issue a memo that they were not amused or were not pleased?
Yeah, you know.
Right.
When a man in a dress with a House of Whoville hat complains about drag queens.
Right.
Like, do please to be doing all the shutting up.
And fucking ruby slippers to boot.
Yes, of course.
To bring it all off, you know, to tie it all together. Jesus, come on.
And maybe that's what needs to happen. We need more high-profile people saying, yeah, a man in a dress complaining about drag queens. Girl,
and I don't know any self-respecting former Catholic who went through that institution during a certain time in our history who didn't get the fuck out as quickly as they could when they reached an age of majority. And spend the rest of their life poking fun and in therapy, you know.
Go ahead, Scott. I'm sorry.
No. That's all. I mean, it's like, what the hell's wrong with you people? If you can't make fun of the high ecclesiastical drag, then what good are you? Go to your room and look shit up online or something.
Go inhale some white smoke.
Yes, indeed.
Right. But it's like, you know, I've heard of the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, but I didn't know their history until all this happened. And they started in 1979, and they were one of the first organizations that actually raised money during the height of the AIDS epidemic.
Yeah.
To give, you know, and they've done a lot of amazing charitable work. Most importantly, like you were saying, Scott, you know, to help people deal with being shunned and kicked out or abused by the church. Because, you know, that was their whole point, is to make fun of religion. You know, and it's just, ugh. So, now, because, go ahead.
They are there on one level to entertain, on another level, but more important level, to make a serious point. And another level, even more important than the other two, is to point the finger at the evildoers and say, fuck you and the horse. You know, get off it.
Right.
You crazy, humorless fucks. You know? Jesus.
And you know what? Maybe that... Oh, I don't know. I just had... Scott triggered a little vision earlier in me of like some chat AI... whatever, bot, maybe writing some Hunter S. Thompson for our time. But now you got me thinking, you know, one of these days there's going to, let me make this perfectly clear. I am sure that there have been gay popes. I know that more than I know that the sun's going to rise tomorrow.
Surely you jest.
I do not, and don't call me Shirley.
And don't call me Shirley.
But one of these days there will be an out gay pope, and by God, rainbow smoke will come out of that fucking chimney.
I want to see it.
And talk about. But here's the LA Dodgers apology.
after much thoughtful feedback from our diverse communities, honest conversations within the Los Angeles Dodgers organization, and generous discussion with the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, the Los Angeles Dodgers would like to offer our sincerest apologies to the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, member of the LGBTQ plus community, and their friends and family. Now motherfuckers are thinking about the protests that were going to be happening in front of Dodger Stadium on the 16th of because, you know, like I said, LA Pride stepped out, and they're one of the biggest Pride organizers in the country. And like I said, the LA LGBTQ plus center in LA. And they disavowed, and they said basically, either you bring the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence back or just cancel the event, period. Full stop. Done.
All of a sudden, they remembered that the gay dollars are still printed green like everybody else's and not rainbow flagged. And oh, but I got to tell you, there's because we're out of time, but there's one more butt hurt out there. Now they're mad at Ford. Mm.
And who?
Ford Motor Company.
Now, what did Ford do?
Well, the thing is, they're so damn slow. This is actually from last year. But the same crowd that was Bud Light butthurt is now butthurt about Ford trucks. Because Ford put out an ad of their... Oh, what's it called? The Raptor or something? It's this badass truck. And you see it off-road and bouncing through mud holes, and the truck's just filthy. And, you know, closed course, professional driver. Do not try at home. You know, the standard disclaimer. And it's just beating around in the bush and getting dirty, and the thing is, it's all a distant shot. And so all the, you know, all them manly men with their Bud Lights in their hand last year, well, they didn't see it till this year. Well, yeah, I tell you what, ain't nothing like a Ford truck. That's a badass truck. That's a manly truck. And they're swilling on their Bud. I mean, this is just me imagining. This isn't in the commercial. But then the truck goes through like a big puddle of clear, clean water.
And
a puddle of clear, clean water. And you find out.
Oh.
That's when you find out, quel horreur, that beefy, manly, muscular, butch, studly Ford truck has a rainbow skin on it.
Oh!
Ooh, that's good. I give that ad person a raise.
Ooh. Yeah, and you know they're, God damn it, they're ruining everything.
They're coming for our trucks.
They got the trucks.
Oh,
Target.
I know you
got
to go.
And Bud Light. And what else are they mad about? There was an ad with a woman. She was just not even a trans woman, just cis woman. And you know, the butthurt brigade. Well, it's time to give them the Bud Light treatment. Because, see, they think they actually made a difference with Bud Light because the Bud Light marketing vice president, you know, got sacked or whatever. And, look, they're going broke. Go woke and go broke. The only problem is AB InBev's profits are through the freaking roof.
Yeah, that part.
And they're going to stay that way. And they own so many. Own so many beer. It's almost as like the bigots and the transphobes and the homophobes. There's no beer that's safe for them anymore. Poor little babies.
What little babies? You need a blankie. Oh,
they need a safe space.
Speaking of movies, Scott and Robin, have you guys watched Air yet on Prime Video? About Air Jordan.
No, I have not seen that yet.
No, I've heard of it.
must watch it. You must watch it. And my only complaint is whoever, the only, cause it, you know, it's the ever amazing, you know, Viola Davis and our boy Jason. I mean, how can you go wrong? You got Viola Davis. You got Jason Bateman. You got, Matt Damon. You got, what's the boy's name? Vic, you know, the other, Matt Damon's other half. Oh yeah, Ben Affleck. But who really surprised me, and I was really glad to see him, was Chris Tucker. Because he hasn't been around in a while, so it was good seeing him. And even a little, and Damon, Marlon Wayans had a little cameo in it as well, a little part in it as well. So every time I see black actors, I'm like, yay. But no, it was, you know, basically it's just, you know, the story of how, you know, Nike, you know, got Michael Jordan to, you know, endorse this shoe. And it's a must watch.
And it's on Prime?
And it's on Amazon, yeah, Prime Video. And yeah, because it was at the movies earlier, a couple of months ago. It was released at the movies and now it's on Prime Video. So you don't have to pay to watch it if you're a Prime, you know, if you're a Prime member. But it's definitely worth the watch. And my only complaint about the movie is whoever did Viola Davis's makeup has no clue how to do makeup for a black woman. Viola Davis was looking ashy, and yes, her makeup was horrible.
Horrible. Oh, what was that? What was I watching the other day? It was a beautiful black woman. She's sitting somewhere, and she goes, "Good Lord, I am ashy as fuck." And whips out that lotion and starts,
Where did I see that? Because I saw it too. Was it a commercial? No, it couldn't have been a commercial.
No, it'll come to me at 3 o'clock in the morning and I'll wake up and remember it. Text me
because I'll be up working. I will be awake working, so you can go ahead and text me.
At midnight?
And when you realize it. Yes, because I worked with my airport night.
What was that? What was that? That's driving me crazy now.
It'll come to you.
Because the scene is right there. I know I saw it in the last 3 days at least.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
What the hell's wrong with us, Robin?
And it's not a commercial?
It wasn't in the White House Plumbers, was it, Scott?
You know, it might have been a
black
preview.
Woman saying that she's
ashy. It might have been a preview for something else.
I know what it was. Was it in?
Black Lady sketch show?
I think it was.
Yeah, you're right.
It sounds like something from the Black Lady sketch show.
Got it. I about peed laughing so hard at that.
Because I can't imagine it being that this sounds like something from the, you know, something, because only a black woman could write something like that.
Right.
And that'd be offensive. So, yeah, you know, and like I think I told this story about Jan when we first got together, and I have all these different moisturizers. And she's like, well, what is all this for? And I'm like, and so I showed her what happened when I get out the shower or the tub and don't put lotion on. It is not pretty. And she's like, my God. I'm like, yeah,
I remember when you clued me in and I realized that there is a white girl phenomenon too. Remember?
Yeah, it's called chalky.
Yeah, chalky. I'm just looking right now. I'm chalky as shit. Where's my Aveeno?
You're chalky as fuck. You know, you're chalky as fuck.
And I do. I love that Aveeno. That Aveeno body moisturizer. That's so good.
Yeah, that's what Dan uses. But before me, she didn't really use lotion. And I'm like, honey, you're chalky. And she's like, what? I said, chalky, sweetie. You need to put lotion on. Because she's like, well, do white people get ashy? I said, no.
Y'all get chalky. Because I came up with that.
Y'all get chalky.
I was part of that. Yeah.
Y'all get chalky. And as well you should be. As well you should be. Because now, black folks, y'all don't get ashes. Y'all get chalky.
Well, one product that I have avoided since trying it was that oatmeal bath with the apple chunks and the raisins and the brown sugar.
Yeah.
Don't bathe. Stay away from that stuff.
Wait a minute. Did you say? Wait a minute.
Yeah, the oatmeal bath.
No, you fucking with me now.
With the apples and the chunks of apples and raisins and brown sugar. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Leave it for breakfast. Don't try to bathe in it.
You know what, y'all? Oh, and just on a parting joke, Michael Harriet, you know, he said in a tweet that Tim Scott, and this is how he said it, Finna asked you to be his VP.
Finna.
What is he calling?
Ice Cube. He finna ask Ice Cube to be his VP.
Finna ask, and he should have said ask. You know, should have been AXC. Yes. Finna ask, you know, Ice Cube to be his VP. You know.
Oh my God. Is there anyone running?
Here's a great response. I'm sorry, no. To what Michael Harriet wrote about Tim Scott, and somebody wrote, I'm starting to think when he said fuck the police, he was just expressing his displeasure with Yacht Rock and was talking about Sting's group.
At this point, it's believable.
Oh.
Is there?
It is.
There was a piece on, was it 60 Minutes or one of the shows, just the other night or the other day, featuring Tim Scott. Is there a dorkier human on the planet who I have a better chance of beating Trump than Tim Scott does? And that's saying something.
Oh, when he said, you know, and perhaps even president, and it's like, wow, you just erased Barack Obama entirely, didn't you?
You tried to, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. One last moment of monumental, titanic, right-wing intellect.
Oh, God.
Maggots. This is from Politico, not The Onion. House Republicans, this is Olivia Beavers writing, House Republicans are bidding for steep spending cuts in exchange for raising the debt ceiling. First, though, they paused during their private weekly meeting on Tuesday, that would be today, to bid for something else. And, you know, if this just gives you a full body cringe and the shivers, and yeah, you might want to get the bucket handy. They paused to bid for something else. This is so crazy. Speaker Kevin McCarthy's used chapstick.
Well, how do we know where it's been?
Annette just sent that to me, and I may not eat for a week. No, really. The fundraising auction of McCarthy's used cherry lip balm ended when Representative Marginal Trailer Queen placed a winning bid of $100,000.
Jesus.
Jesus fucking Christ.
She only began bidding after the California Republican chose to sweeten the deal. He agreed to attend a dinner with the winner and whichever donors and supporters they plan to bring along. That cash is headed for the House GOP campaign arm. So gross.
It's... Well, you get to the point where there's not much that you can even say with the behavior of these people. Between the guy with the Merchants of Death and his etched in stone in his backyard, and now the fucking chapstick, and God knows, They better hermetically seal it, double bag the fucker before they ship it to the winner.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the origin story for some nightmare that yields a like super anti-hero monster, you know, Wax Man or something. God, gross.
And it was dinner on the west coast, Robin.
Oh, I know. I did a number, and it turns out it wasn't even real quality chapstick. It was the branded chapstick from the campaign of Representative Aaron Bean, a maggot from Florida.
Probably made in China.
That he gave to the weaker speaker. God, it's probably probably made of rendered Uyghur fat from China. Yeah.
Oh God! Oh no! Oh. Yeah, because those campaign trinkets are not top of the line unless they're coming from Democrats, where the union bug is on each and every fucking item.
Damn right it is. I had the union bug on my campaign signs last year.
I remember that.
I was the only candidate who did.
And that means something.
Mm-hmm.
Or it ought to. Anyway.
Didn't mean enough to get the endorsement. We don't need a tranny in the
Wow.
We don't need some tranny queer in the legislature.
Motherfucker.
Those were the words of a union lady.
I need you. I hopefully, I don't know what you have on tap for tomorrow for a prayer meeting Wednesday, but please do. I hope you do. Talk about the rift that is going on with United Methodist Church and how they're splitting.
Yeah, I've been reading. I was reading about that.
And why
are they splitting?
Because they want to start affirming, same-sex marriages and having openly gay clergy. And we can't have that. Particular shit we can't have.
This is why we can't have nice things.
This is why we can't have nice things. So, yeah, I hope, and I will be listening in tomorrow, hopefully for you to, if you're going to.
Well, I think we just did the story, Tracy.
Yeah, I know, but still, I want your analysis of it.
Well, you know about,
like,
you know,
I know you're reading about.
You know how it is with me and religion.
I know, but the fact that they're fighting over, whether or not to have the affirming, and actually welcoming, not just, okay, y'all can come, but, don't talk. Don't expect for us to marry you, and don't expect for you to, be able to be gay clergy. So I can't wait to see where this is going. It's a page turner on this one. That part.
Yeah, it is.
So anyway, now I know we got to go because it's time for you to boogie on so Podbean doesn't come for your ass.
Yeah,
so,
that'd be nice.
And y'all, please, whatever you guys can, donate to my girl. Things are still kind of tight right now. I did get approved for my funding for the rest of my master's program, but I'm still playing catch up. So, but anywho, y'all, do right by my girl and make sure she gets, did you say something? Are you in the deficit of four digits?
Oh yeah, we're at 1358. It'll be 1658 tomorrow.
Oh God. Okay, come on, y'all. Something.
We are unfunded since last Wednesday.
Last Wednesday?
Yeah.
Okay. Come on, y'all. Anyway, I love you, sis. Scott, it was amazing. I do love our chat when it's just you, me, and Robin. It was awesome. Be sure to watch Air, and I would love to hear your opinion, both of you guys. And definitely, if you want a good chuckle, please watch Victor Victoria. Definitely you, Robin. I love to get your take on it now that you are who you are now.
Thank you. I will. Ted Lasso first. Randy Radar just sent something to me. I hope that the attack on the Kremlin gets more than a passing notice in the news. Did I miss something?
There was an attack on the Kremlin?
Let me look.
I think, wasn't there a device set off? But I didn't think it was at the Kremlin. I thought it was in...
That was 3 weeks ago. There was a so-called drone attack on the Kremlin.
Really?
Which I think was phonied up. I don't think that
And of course, Ukrainian forces have pushed into Russian territory because they're chasing the Romulans. I mean, Russians.
Romulans.
Yeah. Because all you ever see of them is assholes and elbows.
Wait a minute. I thought Ted Lasso was on Tuesday.
Yeah. It drops tonight.
Not tonight. It's on.
What do you mean?
Oh, you mean at midnight. Okay.
No, it'll
episode 11.
It'll drop for me.
Oh, for you, yeah. But, yeah, no, it's... But on my Apple, it says coming this Wednesday on Apple TV.
Yeah, it says Wednesday, but they've been dropping on Tuesdays for me. Here, let me see. Okay. Okay, it hadn't dropped for me either. Mom City.
Mom City. Ooh.
Oh, and I'm sorry. Is Edwin Akufu just a crazy little bastard?
Oh, wow. Wow. Apparently, the brother that plays him, I guess he's, you know, he does, the characters he usually plays are affable, really nice guys. So.
And he's having a blast playing an asshole.
Oh, he's having a fucking ball playing an asshole. Because he's a right cuss. He is.
Well,
anyway, and
apparently he's got really great vocal skills, because did you notice all the accents that he did in last week's episode?
Yes!
Including a white guy American redneck accent?
Man! That was spot on.
Oh, it was way good.
It was way good. Okay, Rob, you got to go.
I gotta go.
You know, again, I don't want... I love you.
Love you.
Be good.
Scott, and take care of yourself.
And we'll talk soon.
Well, thank you, Tracy and Robin, for delightful.
It was
Tuesday
much fun.
Chat.
It was absolutely much fun, Scott. And finish Idiocracy tonight, please.
Part two, second half comes tonight.
And remember, who needs water when you have Brondo, the thirst mutilator? It's got electrolytes.
Good night, Robin.
It's got electrolytes, Scott.
Indeed.
All right, good night.
Take care.
Hey, thanks, everybody. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you this evening. Thank you every evening. Thank you. Each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, this evening in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Remember, like and subscribe, y'all. Like and subscribe. Leave a comment on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. It is making a difference. Our numbers are up. They're not Joe Rogaine numbers, but we're not after those. but it's nice to welcome new friends into the community. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Stay safe. Get your booster if you can. Little Miss Uninsured here has had her last one. Wear your mask if you're around maggots. And wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, maintain your social distance. And, well, if the marginal trailer queen offers you some chapstick, avoid that like the plague, because she and it is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.